across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We got a show, but just want to be opportunistic here because Hayley said to me just as we were coming on air that Harry and Meghan have invited 600 people to their wedding. And she said, I don't think I know 600 people.
I've got more than that on Facebook, but would I actually want them at my wedding?
I'm glad you mentioned Facebook, and we'll come back to that in just a second. But I didn't know some of the people at my wedding.
Really? Who invited them?
Friends of my wife, you see. Acquaintances of my wife. And then we went on... This is very Brighton, this story. We went on holiday, a honeymoon, to the West Indies, which is a bit of a disappointment, actually. I'd just as soon have gone to Worthing, but anyway. And then when we got back, my dad met us at the airport and he said, we didn't want to bother you whilst you're on your honeymoon, but you've been burgled. And they'd got in and they'd stolen all the wedding presents. And they'd practically moved in, actually. And they had taken the bed to pieces. It was going out the back windows because they didn't have any keys for the doors. So they didn't want to damage the place. So they were stealing the stuff out of the windows. Anyway, cut a long story short. Turned out that the burglar was one of my wedding guests.
No.
Yes, isn't that Brighton?
Wow.
Anyway, you mentioned Facebook. Forgive me. And I'm glad you did, because I think I've found the secret of a long and successful life. It's when you're young, don't go down to the pub with your mates. Because that's how Bill Gates ended up writing all the software that's turned him into who he is.
Yeah.
His mates used to go down to the pub at university, the bar, whatever. And Bill Gates, where's Bill? Bill's in his room. What's he doing? He's doing something called writing software. What the? That's not going to work. Zuckerberg was the same. Zuckerberg's mates used to go down to the bar at university. And where's Mark? He's come up with this idea, this goofy thing. It's some kind of internet thing that's going to link everybody in the campus together. What's he calling it? He's calling it the Facebook. What a nerd. Anyway, Facebook is in the news for all the wrong reasons at the moment, obviously. We all know that, because 50 million accounts have been, not stolen, no, harvested. Makes it all sound just slightly less illegal, doesn't it?
Slightly.
Harvested or scalped, is that another term that they're using?
Obtained.
Obtained. And it's been used, the information has been used in order to change government, to affect democracies. And it's presumably something that is going to only happen more rather than less, even though what has happened so far appears to have come very close to breaking the law. But they'll find ways of doing it, perhaps quite rightly, so that democracy becomes even further reaching and actually reaches out to people who've never thought of voting before. But because through their Facebook activities, politicians can discover things that they care about that politicians didn't know people cared about, and those people can then be reached. Whether or not the politicians are going to be able to give them what they want is another matter. But in a sense, it seems to me that this whole Facebook and data protection furore that's going on at the moment masks a number of things. One of which is that people, generally speaking, are very lethargic about politics, because it doesn't seem that they've actually got any influence over it. One of the things that the Facebook thing has revealed is that it is going to be possible for absolutely everybody to be involved. And they want everybody to be involved, don't they? They want the housewives in America who've never thought of voting before. They want the disillusioned men in America who think that their votes don't count and nobody listens to them. They're being reached now through this Facebook thing. You got Facebook?
Love it. I have to say, I do enjoy it. It's a social thing for me. It is social media for me. And it's people that I would never ordinarily keep in touch with. It's school friends. It's ex-work colleagues. I just think without it, my life would be, I can't say be worse, but I feel like there would be a gap without those people in my life. Mm. And that, for me, is a mechanism to have those people in my life.
Okay, that's how you use it. But how the things that you do on Facebook are being used by other people, business to begin with, of course, rather than politics, is something you don't have any great control over, do you?
No.
Would it unnerve you to learn something that... Well, it won't, because I actually told you about it in the production area, so you'll have to pretend I haven't told you it, OK?
I can look surprised.
Can you pretend that I haven't told you this?
Yes.
Right. Facebook published an academic paper a couple of years ago on unsent emails. All the information that they've managed to gather about emails that people compose but never send. That information is gathered. I'm not completely convinced it's Facebook, because Facebook doesn't tally with people's emails, does it? Or does it?
Unless they're the messenger part of it.
It probably was not emails so much as Facebook messages that are typed but never sent. And they're interested in that and what that reveals about us. The things that we want to say but chicken out in the end.
I love that.
What do you think people might know about you?
Too much. Although I have to say I do silly things. So for my job on Facebook, I put that I'm a princess, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, I just put that I'm a princess. So no one knows where I am, if they so happen to find me.
Yeah, so I'm not quite with you.
You put what you do for a living, and I choose to say that I'm a princess.
Ah. Well, since I know nothing about Facebook, I'm proud to say that for a variety of reasons, I've never had a Facebook account. I did way, way back, put my toe in the water, quickly realised it wasn't for me, and left after about 3 or 4 days, and I've never been back. And on the same, I'll tell you what I've just done. I've just downloaded an app that would allow me to trade on the stock exchange, which, again, I've never done before. And it doesn't seem to me like a decent way to earn a living, really, because what are you actually doing?
I've got some bitcoins. We'll talk about that another time.
No, we'll talk about it now.
Oh. Well,
I'm just liking you even more now that I discover that you're on your way to being a billionaire.
Well, I don't know about a billionaire, not even a millionaire yet, but it's going all right.
How many bitcoins have you got?
A few.
And how have you come by them?
It's me and my husband. It's a joint thing. Probably started about 3-4 years ago.
How do you start? I know is two things about Bitcoin. First of all, that you needed to have been involved about 10 years ago for it to be worth anything.
Well, to be worth a lot.
Oh, to be worth a lot. And then is it true about this poor man who kind of started a Bitcoin and forgot about it and dumped his computer, put it to be collected by the men, the bin men and women, only to discover that his Bitcoin is now worth £1.2 million?
Yes.
And apparently he spends every weekend down at the tip trying to find his computer, because that is where the Bitcoin is, in that computer.
Mm.
He can't download it anywhere else or pull it back down from an iCloud.
Well, now you can save it on a key, which is what we do, so like a USB key.
We'll come back to Bitcoins.
Yes.
Let's stay with data and the whole business of is Big Brother watching you. And we couldn't talk to anybody better positioned to tell us yes or no than Silky Carlo, who's a director at Big Brother Watch. Hello, Silky.
Hi, good evening, guys.
Are we moving closer to 1984?
I think maybe, you know, that threshold has even been passed.
Oh, OK.
I mean, so let's look at the whole surveillance. In answer to that question, we need to look at the whole surveillance context. And we live in an environment in the UK where we're under constant surveillance, more surveillance than any society in the whole of human history has ever been under.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as a result of government surveillance and international government surveillance. And then, you know, which is under the spotlight right now, is corporate surveillance like that from Facebook. And Facebook itself conducts an extraordinarily broad and deep level of surveillance. So, you know, not only collecting the data that we give the platform or doing things, like you said, you know, even holding information about status updates that we start to type but then don't actually post, but also then combining that with offline data that it buys, and making a whole picture of us, and then doing insight and analytics into that data that can not only, you know, understand our personalities and our psychological traits, but can predict behaviours as well. And then, you know, that really valuable data is available basically to the highest bidder.
Hmm. Do you have any idea And I'm not expecting you to, because I don't know whether you are well-versed in the technology of all of this, as well as you are, obviously, in the sort of philosophy and the morality of it. But do you have any idea how, between me sending a phone text to my friend and producer, Hayley, which she then receives on her phone, does that information go via some sort of robot software, whatever, which then is primed to pick up on certain words, perhaps, that are in that message, that are then digested and then sent off to different buckets? Well, I mean, let me give you what's an example. Supposing I were to send a text to Hayley and say, shall we talk about MI5 on the show tonight? And MI5 is one of those buzzwords that whoever is watching or listening might be watching out and listening for. How they know that I've sent her a message that includes the word MI5, and then what happens to that information? Does that get put in lots of buckets? These are two people who might be a danger to our country because they're talking about the secret services. Or these are people who might be interested in the next James Bond film when it comes out.
Yeah, you might be surprised to hear this, but it doesn't matter what's in your text message. Yes, it's passively monitored, which means that it goes through our secret services monitoring processes. The what's called metadata, so the fact that you've texted Hayley, for example, is stored for a year, and that storage pot, as you described it, is available to the police if they want to go in and access it. But what the intelligence agencies do with it is really anyone's guess, because obviously that's highly classified. But looking at the legislation, which I've spent years doing and fighting and litigating as well, they have blank check powers to monitor all of our communications. That's not just text messages. It's emails, it's voice calls, it's video calls, internet browsing. And, you know, how this ties into the Facebook story as well, I think it is an important thing to say, that Facebook as a private company is a honeypot available for our security and intelligence agencies, because the government, the UK government in particular, but practically more than any other government in the world, has such incredible blank check powers to take data sets from basically any company that it wants, and also to break security systems. So when we look at the processing power that Facebook has and the 2 billion profiles that it has, let alone everyone else it's spying on around the world, all of that information is available to our intelligence agencies too. And to take that further, another angle on this is that Cambridge Analytica is a shell company that's owned by a bigger group called SCL, and SCL is a military contractor that has contracts relating to data analytics, etc., with the UK Ministry of Defence and allegedly one of our intelligence agencies.
Well, blimey. I did not know about 80% of that, and I'd like to think I keep abreast. So what do you do differently then on a personal level, Silky, with your technology that that I, oblivious, and actually most people pretty oblivious, should be thinking about doing as well?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Tommy, because this stuff, this information isn't readily available. For years it was called anything from conspiracy theory to conjecture, but now we have this in black and white in statute, and it's being litigated. So, you know, it's out in the open now, but I appreciate that it's not the most public information. But certainly if anyone's interested, have a look at Big Brother Watch, you know, our website or on Twitter, you know, where we try to disseminate some of this information. We also do monthly workshops in London, unfortunately not further afield, but they're called crypto parties, and that's where we try to teach people how you can reclaim some privacy in your everyday life. It's simple things like, for example, there's an app called Signal which allows you to do encrypted messaging, voice calls, and video calls.
Really?
A bit like WhatsApp. But bear in mind, WhatsApp is owned by Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of the not the content of your messages, but the fact that, you know, say, for example, if you WhatsApp Hayley,
yeah,
that's the kind of data that then Facebook can
so just process. Sorry, just go back a second, because I want to be clear that I understand this. You can actually download your own kind of Enigma machine.
Yeah, that's the one way of looking at it. It's a very simple piece of software. It's exactly like WhatsApp, except for the fact that it's not owned by Facebook, and the code that goes into making the app is publicly available, which makes a huge difference because it means that we can audit it. We can look at whether there are any surveillance backdoors in it, which there aren't, and so we can have a higher level of trust in it than something like WhatsApp, which is a commercial piece of software owned by Facebook.
Of course, we have to say at some point in this conversation that besides all the things that we get quite understandably neurotic about, besides all of those things, and that's fair and right, and we should be vigilant, some good use is put to the collection of some of this data, isn't it? Or not?
Well, I don't see what good there can be in collecting the personal information of millions of innocent citizens. That is simply characteristic of an authoritarian society, not a free society. And, you know, I strongly believe that people who are suspected of criminal activity, and especially serious crimes, paedophilia, terrorism, etc., should be under direct, acute surveillance. But that is a very different thing.
But how do you know that they're planning those things unless you go trawling for general activity? People who are considering committing terrorist acts or the other crimes that you mentioned, they don't walk around with a sign on their forehead saying, I'm a potential terrorist. They have to be snooped.
But that doesn't involve intrusive surveillance on the mass scale that we're now seeing by any shape or form. This is a total departure from the kind of democratic system that we've lived in. The system that we currently have is the dystopian nightmare that people spoke about throughout the 20th century, basically. And that's the kind of reality that we're now living in. And never, ever before would anyone have thought that this would be an acceptable way for the UK government to behave, to collect, to monitor undersea cables carrying basically global internet traffic, monitoring everything that we do, say, and then effectively think. So, you know, we're really, really in a strange place in the UK with surveillance at the moment, both state level and commercial. It's becoming almost inescapable. We're nearing a point of no return. Big Brother Watch is taking government to court on mass interception, and we're due a judgment in the next couple of months, which I'm very, very confident will be successful. But we'll see. You know, this is a big, big system, and we've just got to keep fighting it.
How are you doing this? Are you targeting individual big players in this game?
In terms of our legal challenge to mass surveillance, we've launched that legal challenge against the UK government.
That's a fairly big player.
Yeah. We make friends in the right places, clearly.
It is very difficult to police something so big and so sort of Dodge City-like as the internet, isn't it? This has been a problem now for a long, long time, that because nobody knows where is the server that is disseminating direct calls to action by potential terrorists. Nobody knows how to disable that.
There are ways of doing it, though, and the extent of criminality in human society is, you know, obviously massive. And we saw just a week or so ago police saying that they're aware of thousands and thousands of paedophiles online, but they don't have the resources to go and arrest those people. You know, similarly, there have been lots and lots of reports to police recently of sexual offences that aren't being investigated. So we've got a policing resource problem in the first instance. But in terms of a much much, much, much rarer crime like terrorism, we simply cannot move towards living in a society where every citizen is treated as a potential citizen. Because, you know, if you follow that kind of logic, and the kind of logic that I think was perhaps underlying your question about, you know, don't we need to monitor all of the internet to make sure that there aren't terrorists hiding in it? That is a suspect first, innocent later kind of approach that really turns the democracy on its head. Hmm. That's the kind of logic that we saw in all sorts of authoritarian and totalitarian political systems in the 20th century. So unfortunately, that is the direction that our government has taken, and that has actually taken to a more extreme degree than any government in previous history.
Dora, I didn't mean to interrupt. I entirely agree, but before I forget this point, because you're so interesting, that as I'm listening to you, I think about eight things I want to ask you about in the course of any one of your the points that you're making. So what was it I was just thinking? That, oh, yes. I remember somebody once saying that if Kate Adey had been active and had access to the technology of the broadcast media in the Christmas of 1914, the First World War would have been stopped dead in its tracks right there, because people would have known exactly what was going on. And I find myself just batting on behalf of the internet for a moment against you, if you like, saying that besides it's very important that we are not treated like citizens, as you so eloquently said, the internet does have the opportunity to expose a great many activities that it's worth us knowing about and possibly therefore acting on. So there is this, it's a bit like alcohol, you know, in the wrong hands, the internet is a terrible thing. But in the right hands, it can surely be a force for good. And so there is a balance there, isn't there, that we have to work really hard to achieve.
Tommy, I absolutely agree. I'm pro-internet. You know, I grew up at a time when, you know, when my house finally got internet access, it was the most exciting thing. And I totally believe in the democratizing potential of the internet. I really, really do. And that's kind of why, even more strongly, I feel that we need to push back very, very hard against government attempts to turn what was a really free and democratizing space where we could share information into this kind of surveillance panopticon where everyone's watched, and now increasingly censored as well, you know, with government attacks on not anything from so-called non-criminal extremism to unpopular and controversial views, or even, you know, quote unquote fake news, or whatever that is. All these kind of attacks on this free flow of information as well, we really need to push back against. And of course, you know, not only at the state level, but at the commercial level as well. The way that the internet has been built on at a commercial level, a surveillance model to enable free platforms like Facebook to make profit.
You're listening to Silky Carlo, who's director of Big Brother Watch. Silky, we've got to listen to a couple of messages very quickly. Can I possibly ask you, because I thought of another couple of things I've got to ask you, could I persuade you just to hang on for a little bit longer and stay with us?
Of course.
Good on you. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Talking to Silky Carlo, who is director of Big Brother Watch, and Silky's hung on to talk a little bit longer. You can call if you want to, but it's kind of crowded with me, this one. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. Silky, what, if anything, should people do slightly differently to be on their guard about intrusive interest in their internet traffic? What do you do that the rest of us haven't thought of yet?
Well, in the first instance, I would recommend downloading an app called Signal. As I said, this is an encrypted messaging app, which is a lot like Facebook, but it's designed entirely to protect your privacy. It's free, and I try to move my conversations onto that app for people that I know who are just on WhatsApp. You know, I'm trying to move the conversation over to Signal. There are other things you can do. So there's a web browser called the Tor browser, T-O-R, And that anonymizes your web traffic in such a way that it's very difficult to intercept or monitor what you're doing online. Mm-hmm. And that's really a lifeline, especially for some of the journalists I work with and other human rights campaigners. Mm-hmm. That web browser is really important. So those are two free, really accessible tools that you can use to do most of the things that we do electronically every day, which is basically make calls, exchange messages, and go on the internet.
Right, without being obtrusive, I find myself wanting to ask things like, you know, whether you're an avid Facebook user. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but if you are, do you use it any differently from the way in which the other 2 billion people on Facebook do?
I don't use Facebook.
Okay.
I'm not on the platform, but I think you ask a good question. You know, for people that aren't ready to leave, I would definitely recommend severely limiting some of the apps that might have gained access over the years, and particularly just thinking about the extent of the information that you share on there. Facebook will very cleverly make inferences about the fragments of information you give it anyway, and the other stuff that you do, whether online or offline.
Now, hang on, you talk about these inferences, and it almost smells to me like the beginnings of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, Facebook does use artificial intelligence.
Oh, here we go.
For a number of reasons, yeah. And so that could be to identify accounts that it thinks are bots. It's now using AI to identify accounts that it thinks are extremist. And what I have to stress with this, because I know, you know, like most people, no one really wants to be surrounded by, you know, violent views or anything like that. But that's not what we're talking about with extremism. With extremism, we're talking about essentially fringe politics that people fear could turn into something else. It's not criminal. This isn't criminal activity. But yet Facebook is monitoring its platforms to try and find accounts that it thinks are on those fringes, and then intervening with those people. We've also seen more moves recently using AI on platforms like Facebook and others to de-rank content that it doesn't believe is authoritative. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are we going to end up in a situation where on these big platforms we only get so-called authoritative news sources? And that would really be to undermine the very purpose of the internet, which I think was to broaden our horizons and increase the way that we share information. And we don't want to be just recipients of basically state-approved information, but that's what we risk with this increasing AI. Mm. There are other things as well that Facebook has done that are probably worth mentioning. For example, it has a monitoring system that tries to identify people that it thinks might be depressed and suicidal, which I find incredibly intrusive, but particularly for people that are looking for online expression and connection with friends and family in a way that they want to really, truly express themselves and how they really feel. You know, probably don't want to be spied on and monitored as you do that, in which case Facebook probably isn't the place to do it.
So they might be looking for people who have mental health problems in the beginning, because they want to help provide them with the right kind of medication and counselling, or some other more nefarious purpose?
Well, exactly. So the idea of the intervention with people that might be depressed and suicidal is to basically stage an intervention to ask them if they're okay and how they feel. But that's just incredibly... Do you want a for-profit company that certainly does not exist for your benefit or for your health to have that kind of information about you?
If you're somebody... My thinking at the moment is quite clouded by a person who has called this show last night and the night before, who is somebody who is able to admit that he doesn't have anybody to talk to. And so he started calling NATO, the United Nations, and MI5 to talk about an incident that happened in his life in Thailand some 10 years ago. One of the things that the internet, it seems to me, does is provide some sort of friendship or a social network for people who don't have the social network that humanity over the last 2 million years, say, has been able to enjoy, which was communal cave life to begin with, and then village life, thereafter. And then up until perhaps the 50s or the 60s, you know, everybody knew everybody else's neighbour. But all that has changed enormously. And people are living their lives largely alone. And staying with the very particular, I know, example that you brought up, it could be that people who are beginning to move towards having difficulties, mental difficulties, haven't got anybody else to talk to and don't have anybody in their lives who could say to them, perhaps you ought to go and see your GP.
I think that's the benefit of a social network, as you say, it totally is. But whether that's a role that a for-profit company that revolves around data exploitation like Facebook should play, or whether it's the role that an online community should play, you know, those are two really different things. Just for me to, you know, finally illustrate why I'm so cynical about Facebook's role in well-being, a few years ago it played a live experiment on its users, up to about a million users, manipulating people's news feeds covertly, without their authorization or consent, to see if they could make them feel happy or sad.
Oh,
so it was a mood manipulation experiment, which it sounds like you've heard of.
Yeah.
Which I found that really disturbing, and I think most Facebook users probably would find that really upsetting too.
Yeah, I do remember that. So, close your Facebook account. Apparently, there's a lot of it going on.
Whether or not people want to close their accounts, it's a personal decision that each individual should make, but I think it's really important that we make informed choices. And if there's one good thing that comes out of this scandal, it's that I think finally privacy advocates like me and Big Brother Watch have managed to tell people, you know, this isn't a one-off, this isn't just Cambridge Analytica, and in fact it's not even just Facebook. This is written into the fabric of the internet economy, which is basically is driven by surveillance machinery, and it's a much bigger problem. But saying that, there are things you can do, and Big Brother Watch, we really seek to share some of that information about the simple things you can do to be more private online and in your personal communications. And that's not only for our individual benefit, but as we've seen in this case, that's for the benefit of society and democratic norms at large.
Silky, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tommy. Lovely to speak to you.
And to Silky Carlo, who is director at Big Brother Watch, and that website is bigbrotherwatch.org.uk. That was fascinating. Bit scary, Hayley.
Yeah.
If you want to be scared, but I don't. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be scared now, but in about 90 seconds, I won't care much anymore. That's how my mind works. Sorry, that's me. Is that you?
No, I think I'd stick around with that thought for more than 90 seconds.
There's so many things to be paranoid about if you want to be.
Yeah, but I think...
Well, nobody wants to be paranoid, but you know, if you want to be scared, if you want to be worried, it's very easy. Not being worried is a much harder place to get to, isn't it?
True, but I think this is one of those things that's all around us. You've got your laptop there. There's a lot of information on that laptop that potentially somebody is using right now to find out information about you.
Who, though?
Well, you use Gmail, right?
Yeah, but is there a person doing this? Or one of the many other things I would like to have asked Silky is whether this artificial intelligence, which is being used now, by some of these organisations, such as, she suggested, Facebook, in looking for the information about you that's passing along whenever you're using the internet and cherry-picking the bits that it needs for commercial purposes, probably, but possibly also political reasons, and putting those into buckets. Is that entirely decided by human beings, or have they begun to create software, robots, that can think for themselves and think, aha, I haven't actually been programmed to go looking for this connection or that connection, but now that I've noticed that it exists, I'm going to start a new bucket of my own.
Definitely.
That's a bit scary.
Yeah.
Because that takes you down the road towards Terminator, doesn't it?
But that's probably where we're going to be in 10 years' time, isn't it?
10 years' time? Not 10 years' time. Mind you, the internet doesn't half move fast, doesn't it?
Well, I think it could even be sooner.
Really?
Yeah, really. You think about how much technology has advanced even in the last 6 months. Your phone, for instance.
Agreed. No, we're a lot further away from Terminator than that because, although I agree that artificial intelligence might actually spring up and become the enemy, the one bit of Terminator that I don't think anybody will ever be able to simulate is time travel.
Oh, that would be fun.
See that? Everyone misses that. Everyone goes, oh, it's going to all be like Terminator and there'll be these robots, these machines coming after us. Yes, they might, but they won't be travelling around in time to do it. Do you think time travel is possible?
I don't know, but I'd like to think so, because I'd love to do it, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I'd like to go back to a time that I would never, so maybe the 1920s.
03444991000. Is time travel ever going to be possible? And if so, what would you like to go back and see? Or, as in my case, what would you like to go forward and see? Let's just talk radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So I've thought a bit about how you could achieve time travel. And this is the only way it could be done.
Run very fast.
Yeah, God, run very fast.
You see.
No, what you'd have to do is this. You know, every single atom in every single molecule in the universe is at a certain point right now at 10:45 this Thursday evening. And that is what gives you now, right?
Yep.
I don't know how many atoms that is, obviously. It's a lot, right? But there is some sort of force that makes the nuclei spin round each other, right?
Right.
Which makes that atom what it is. And then that atom is held by some forces with other atoms that makes a molecule. Right? And that way you've got
two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom, and you've got a molecule of water.
Okay.
Right. And they're all in a certain space, a point. Now, at this moment, at 15 seconds past 10:46 p.m. on this Thursday evening, right, if there was some way that you could get the forces to stop the spinning of those things in the direction that they're spinning and move them back to where they were 10 seconds ago, right across the entire universe, then you would go back 10 seconds in time. And you yourself would be 10 seconds younger, Hayley.
Oh, well, that's a good thing.
Do you play this superficial woman thing on purpose?
No, it's just me.
Really, though, is it really?
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to disappoint, but this is just me.
Is it? Well, that's very endearing, very endearing. No, I'd like to go into the future and see whether the world is going to be a slightly better place than it is now, because I have my hopes that it will be. And I think it would be nice to go forward 100 years and just find out that, you know, just like John Lennon said, you know, no more wars, no more possessions. We all just love each other in a spiritual way. But you'd like to go back to when, did you say?
I think the 1920s, I think.
Why?
Just be fascinating to see, like,
all those diseases that they couldn't cure.
Why do you have to go on the negative stuff?
All the poverty. Haven't you read Grapes of Wrath?
No.
It's a terrible time.
But it's also a time of innocence, isn't it? You know,
innocence?
Yeah.
Really? The 1920s?
Kids played on the street. People didn't have to lock their front doors.
Rickets.
Oh.
Everyone had rickets. When would you go back to, Sam, or would you go forward like me?
I'd go forwards.
You would? But how far forward?
Oh, I'd go, like, I'm curious as to how things are going to be in, like, 1,000 years.
1,000 years from now, will we have legs?
Will there be humans even?
Yeah, will there be humans or just machines?
That's the thing. It's do humans still exist, and like what sort of technology is there going to be around then?
What about if you came back and you were the only human? There's a film like that, isn't there, when they go into the future and then they're the only
Planet
one
of the
that
Apes.
Exists, maybe.
No,
I don't know.
That's the only film I know where he goes into the future, Charlton Heston, from my cold dead hands. And that's because it turns out that he was travelling through space for a long time and time slowed down in his space capsule. So although he aged by 10 years, the planet aged by 100,000 years. Is that what you're thinking of?
I think so.
Of the Apes?
Yeah, it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
But you're not that interested in the future?
Yes and no, because I think it's quite a scary thought that far ahead, because I think it'll be completely different. I don't think the world as it exists today will even be a remote memory.
No.
No.
No, but the 1920s appeals to you.
Yeah.
Great Gatsby is what
it's just quite romantic,
gets you going,
as well.
It? Yes. How about your good self? 0344 499 1000 is the number. We're having a quiet Thursday evening in this evening. Been talking a little bit scarily about Big Brother and data collection. You can text us 87222. Start your message with talk. Andrew in Carlisle has said, if time travel is possible, don't you think that people from the future would have travelled back in time to tell us what the future held in store? And that's a very good point. And, of course, if time travel ever does become possible, then it's happening now.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, that's really weird, isn't it?
But it must be happening now.
So there's like a dual reality going on.
But there's a weird issue with time travel, though, in that, because it's at the minute, the way we perceive it, it's that, say, for example, I was to go back in time and tell myself to not trip over that stone.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have tripped over the stone in the first place.
Mm.
To come back, to want to go back and tell myself to not do it.
Mm. Yes, that definitely is the flaw in the thinking about it. But to me, it explains UFOs, because UFOs haven't come from different galaxies. UFOs are simply ancestry tourists from the future who travel back in these time machines, which are not allowed to make contact with us, so that they can observe their ancestors, or collect samples of the DNA of their ancestors so that they can eradicate physical problems that they face 10,000 years later. That's my theory, and it's a good theory.
And you're sticking to it.
Well, yeah. Not with any, you know, sort of, not with any sort of great resolution. Now, we were just about to move into the next topic of this evening's show when I found the running order of the James Whale programme in the studio that we're broadcasting from. And it's Ash's copy, and it's covered in doodles. And Ash's doodles are very revealing because they're very warm and curvy. He's drawn lots of teacups on saucers, which is very much, as a psychiatrist, as you know, is a symbol of domestic bliss and harmony.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, you wouldn't think that looking at him, though, would you?
And he's drawn a couple of people as well in profile, and they all look fairly benign, although the bottom one is a bit scary. But then he's drawn what is a fairly scary face, albeit one with lots of bulbous features, the eyes and the nose.
Do you think that's a man or a woman?
I think it's a man, personally.
Sure.
Do you doodle?
I do, but I normally do landscape. So I normally do like a beach or a field or a house in the middle of nowhere. I always have a sun. It's always sunny in my doodles.
Okay, that's very healthy, but you don't draw people?
No.
Is that because you can't draw people?
Yeah, I'm not the best. It would have to be stick men if it was people.
Yeah, you see, when they do diagnosis by art with small children who have suffered trauma, or perhaps have been removed from a chaotic family, they often sit them down with some crayons and ask them to draw. And they draw a house. It's a very, very common one. You draw a house. And what the psychiatrists believe, with some substance, is that you can tell an awful lot about a child's background and some of the things that have happened to them from how they draw the house. But they very often don't draw people, just the house. And so the psychiatrist attempted to go, aha, then there is nobody of any great significance in this person's life, this young child's life. But it's usually, I think, because children are aware from a very early age that drawing people is nigh on impossible, and so they don't. Drawing a house is easy. Drawing Thomas the Tank Engine, piece of cake, all straight lines and then puffy smoke coming out of the top. But very few of us can draw people. It doesn't necessarily mean we don't like people. Do you know who was famous for his artwork, which was quite profuse, but never drew people? Hitler.
Oh.
Oh, you don't sound at all surprised there. Just don't tell Boris I said so, that's all.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, he'll start asking whether Putin knows how to draw a stick man. So what are we going to talk about this evening? We are also looking at not what would your name be if you were a cabaret performer, but something similar.
Porn star.
Porn star. I didn't want to say the word porn unless it was the right word, because it suggests that I've got it on my mind, and I haven't. Del Monte has tweeted, Stephen Hawking held a party for time travellers, but didn't advertise the invitation until after the event and no one attended. Oh, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, the porn name thing has been around for a while. Is it the same as you talk about the name of your pet and the name of the street that you were lived
in? Something like that.
Something like that. How does this one work then?
So your first name, your initial, that gives you the first name of your porn star name.
So T in my case?
Yeah.
So I'm Little Miss.
Oh, hang no, you need to look at the men.
You're
a man. Sorry, I didn't think I needed to remind you of that.
I didn't know there was a second sheet.
That's fine.
I'm not used to there being so much research. Right.
And then your second name is a month you were born.
Okay, so I am Shaking Member.
Oh, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit obvious. I mean, it's a bit sort of a harsh image for anybody who is picturing a person vaguely looking like me, shaking a member. You know, you can't help but think of that. So I'm sorry if that image has jumped into your mind, dear listener. What about yourself?
Oh,
who are you?
I like this one. I'm Busty.
Yes.
Biggins.
Busty Biggins?
Yes.
What about Sam?
Sam, what are you?
I am Creamy Pose Pouch.
Oh, that's the best one. I want his name.
Is the one you want? What is it again?
Creamy Pose Pouch.
Creamy Pose Pouch.
That's the best one.
Now, these things have been around quite a while, these porn name things. So in the interests of creativity, I've come up with something parallel, which I'll just detain you with for a second before the news. The first would be, what would your name be if you were Jacob Rees-Mogg? You see, it's different, isn't it?
It
is different. What?
It wouldn't be Jacob.
No, but what would your name be if you were someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg?
Okay.
Okay, so what you have to do is tell me, first of all, which is the newsreader who annoys you the most?
Kay Burley.
Kay Burley? Easily done there. Thank you. Which comedy programme, sitcom, all right, is your all-time favourite?
Only Fools and Horses.
Only Fools and Horses. That's fantastic. And finally, who is your favourite TV chef, cookery programme expert?
Aldo Zilli.
Oh.
Is that too much?
Yeah. Sorry, could you go for a sort of more mainstream one?
Oh. I don't know if I know any. Rusty Lee.
Rusty Lee is on the list, OK? In which case, if you were Jacob Rees-Mogg Haley, you would be Fiona Hancock-Stein.
Wow.
I'll explain how it works in a moment.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So it's more a case of Toys Were Us, then.
Oh, because
Oh, it was Private Eye. So Toys R Us is pretty much no more, and the founder of Toys R Us is very much no more. And I think it's a shame that there isn't a toy shop on every high street, because children get dragged out to the shops, don't they? You see them being dragged round supermarkets. I think supermarkets should say, you know, you don't really need to bring your children here, do you? Because they only end up crying, and that's such a sad sound.
And running around.
You do need if you're a child. Yeah, running around.
It's like kids at a wedding.
Yeah, there was a woman in my Tesco's the other day. I really wanted to step in and help her out. She had one of those children who was going through a phase of squirming. So the child wouldn't sit still in the little child seat that they have in the trolley.
Mm.
And she had a baby in a pouch, and an 18-month-old who was squirming and crying and obviously teething because poor child's cheeks were red and puffy. And this woman was still having to try and do a family shop with all that around it. And I suppose what would be ideal would be a creche of some sort at a supermarket.
Yeah.
They've got a children's creche play area at the new... You know, they used to be Homebase and B&Q?
Yeah.
And they're struggling, apparently, as well, B&Q. And we've got an Australian one near us, which is gigantic. I think it's called something like Bunnings.
Oh, and
they've got a coffee shop. You know, you go in to buy a packet of nails and you can get yourself, you know, the barista will rustle you up a slim whatever it is.
Yeah.
But there's also a kiddies' play area, which is fantastic. It means you can put the children over the fence into the play area and go off and choose your nails, which is superb. But when you were little, was there a toy shop in the high street? And did you linger?
I remember it, actually. Yeah.
What was it like?
Nuxley High Street in near Bexley Heath somewhere, I think.
Yeah.
Belvedere, maybe. I've got vague memories of just things and it being packed.
Aladdin's Cave.
Yeah, but packed and in no particular order, no logical order. So, you know, shops now, they have people that, I don't know, shelf stack, I suppose, and make sure everything's aligned and in its space.
Yeah.
How I remember it from a youngster is just everything chaotic.
Yeah.
And just, you know...
You want that as a youngster.
Yeah.
You don't want it arranged like a library in alphabetical order. You want there to be dolls next to the jigsaw puzzles and Scalextric next to the kites.
Because you never know what you're going to find.
That's exactly it. One of the most brilliant tricks I've ever seen a child psychiatrist do, who wanted to talk to the parents of a child, but the child was in the room, and so this psychiatrist needed the child to be completely distracted, was to pull out this box of battered toys. They were all rubbish. They were all broken. They were rusty. The wheels were off the cars. The heads were off the dolls. And what the psychiatrist did was simply invert the box, and all the toys cascaded onto the floor in a pyramid, and I've never seen a child's eyes light up like it. Because not only were there lots of toys to play with, there was this treasure hunt to go through each of them and identify them and work out which were worth playing with and which weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you'd worked out which ones you could play with, then you could come up with your game.
And find your favourite. Do you remember your favourite toy when you were little?
Go on, then.
I don't know. Oh, they had this little doll that used to do its hair. What was it called?
Tressie.
No.
Oh.
It was a... Because really it was about hairdressing, because obviously all girls like to do hairdressing. And it was just an inanimate, like a mannequin's head.
Yeah.
And you just did its hair, really. I mean, now thinking about it, it sounds very dull and like...
No.
But at the time, you could spend days, weeks, months. Well,
the toy when I was a boy that did that was called Tressie, and it was a full-on doll, but it had a sort of a key at the back, and you could adjust the length of her hair.
Oh, that's cool.
I know, that's pretty cool. And there was a TV ad connected with it, and I can remember the little strap line which used to go... something like, my name's Tressie, blah, 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 my hair grows.
Oh.
And you would watch the handle be turned and Tressie's hair would grow quickly, which was a bit spooky.
Yeah, but cool at the same time, right?
Very cool. Sam, your favourite toy from when you were a boy?
I played with I had a load of plastic toy cars.
Yes, yeah,
we had this really long corridor.
Ah.
And I can remember the game that I would sort of always play. Yeah, I had like loads. Mm. I'd push them all down the corridor, and I basically made like a tournament of whichever one didn't go very far, I'd take them out, and then I'd do it again and come back the other way.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was the game? To scoot the car along the corridor?
So you push them all along the corridor, like, I'd start, like, far down the corridor, so you'd sort of push them all down, whichever ones didn't make it to the end, I'd throw aside... And then I'd, like, end up launching them further and further distances and just see which ones were the best rollers.
This was a game that you constructed yourself. These rules you built yourself.
Yeah.
And that's quite an important part of emotional, intellectual maturation, isn't it? Mm. Which some people say young people and children nowadays are rather deprived of, because they're magnificent games that they play on the internet don't require them to have... any contribution to the way in which the game is constructed, which is where an awful lot of the learning takes place. You know, you give a child three toy cars or a doll, you know, a human doll, whatever, and you can give a boy a doll, you can give a girl a car, I'm not being sexist here, but you give them the toy and it is an object which they then have to animate themselves and give it some life and give it some function and turn it into a game. And there are people who are worried that young people are not developing the skills that those kind of activities delivered, because you open your game box, your Xbox or whatever, and bang, you've got a fantastic world constructed for you there.
It's all too perfect, isn't it, really?
It's all done for you, but great fun, and I envy it. And if I was small again, I know that I would be spending all my time on computer games just as today's youngsters are.
The thing I find so is with Lego, because you think... Nowadays, it's all sets of stuff. You buy a box, and it's that you're going to make the bat cave out of this, or you're going to make a fire engine. Whereas I know all the Lego I had, it was just thousands of bricks. There was nothing specific that would be made from it. It's just go crazy.
I think anybody who was in at the beginning of Lego when it was just red and white bricks and a grey plinth to make your house on is quite shocked and astonished that Lego has pretty much won, hasn't it? I mean, it is the winning toy. And the great computer game that a lot of youngsters start off on, and it's fun, it's constructive, and it's completely harmless, there's no aggression in it, is... what do you call it?
Minecraft.
Minecraft, thank you. Which is kind of like Lego, digital Lego, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less.
So why are those things so popular with children then? And thank goodness that they are. Is it because you're building something?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's because you're creating something, aren't you? It's your imagination.
You're creating a place to live.
Yeah, yeah, it's a community.
Yes.
Well, it's not even that you can do. It's more there's loads in there that you can make. It's because obviously people, you might see people like make pictures or something from... It's just a creativity thing. It's wherever the only limitations to the game are what your imagination is.
Do we know why it's called Lego? I've always wondered this, and I've never been sufficiently interested to Google it. But is it an acronym for something? It's a Danish company, is it not? Am I right?
I think
Danish,
so.
Swedish, like Minecraft. Minecraft's Scandinavian, isn't it? Whilst you guys are looking that up, they're good, these guys. You say something like that and everybody jumps onto their laptops. Andrew has tweet, "Hi, Tommy, I think the only way people shall be able to time travel is through a simulated machine that replicated how it was in the past, i.e. people shall be able to step into a video or a photo from years ago but won't be able to travel into the future." Yeah, I mean, virtual reality is where we're going next, isn't it? So you can just put a mask on, you can be anywhere you want.
It's pretty cool.
Did you manage to find out why Lego's called Lego?
Yes, I did, thanks.
Is it worth knowing?
Sort of. It's derived... it's a bit obvious. It's derived from the Danish phrase leg got, which means play well. So
play
it's a bit,
well.
Yeah, yeah. Colin on Twitter wants to know, how did Tommy get on at Cheltenham? What did you do at Cheltenham?
Thanks for asking. Cheltenham, the horse racing, obviously, he's referring to. Well, lots of the favourites went... What's this chap's name?
Colin Locke.
Colin, yeah, lots of the favourites went in, which meant there weren't many juicy prices to be had. But if you confined yourself to, rather sadly, betting on the first three in the betting, then I made some money on the first 3 days, and then I lost it all on the Gold Cup because the owner... The trainer, the runner, the jockey, the whole lot connected with Might Bite, the Nicky Henderson horse, Nico de Bonville riding, just couldn't be bothered. I've never seen a big race like it. They're up against this horse that's trying its socks off and a jockey who's trying his socks off, and they're all kind of going, oh, why are we here? Steps like that. Really. Ask him how he got on.
Okay, I will.
On Twitter, will you?
Well, maybe hopefully he's listening and he can give us a call.
It's a thought. What's the number again?
0344 499 1000.
That's it. Now then, let's just revert to our new version of Porn Star, which I'll get up here. And Sam, this is your opportunity to find out what your name would be if you were an East London thug.
Right.
I'll do it with you as well, Hayley.
Oh, it's fun. Okay. I love a game.
Okay. So, first of all, your all-time favourite rock band or music band, pop band, would be?
Let's go for something like Aerosmith.
Aerosmith? Fantastic. What's the last handy job you did around the house?
Taking the bins out. Does that count?
It's not really handy, is it? It's not a handyman job. You didn't have to go You didn't have to go to B&Q, did you, to get the equipment for taking the bins out?
Did you fix something?
I installed a radiator cover.
Oh.
That's very impressive, OK. And who is your least favourite politician, UK politician, for whatever reason? Doesn't betray your politics necessarily.
OK, I'm literally just pulling one out of nowhere because...
Okay.
Let's go Nigel Farage, why not?
Nigel Farage, OK. Well, bearing in mind the fact that the first, great East London thug name was Jack... The Hat McVitie. So I'm doing it all on the basis of that, OK?
OK.
Your East London thug name, Sam, would be George the Tire Lever Brown.
And if you say it like Ray Winston, you know who they sent after him, don't you? They sent George the Tire Lever.
OK, Hayley, your turn. Your favourite band?
Spice Girls.
Oh, God, oh, that doesn't...
You can't continue now, can you? Like,
no, can stopping. You make it a band? Ones that play instruments.
Oh, I don't know any that play instruments.
Well, all right, one you've heard of, then.
Earth, Wind and Fire.
OK, Earth, Wind and Fireworks. The last handy job you did around the house.
Ever? I don't know. Oh, gosh. I don't think I've ever done one.
Have you got any tools in the kitchen drawer? Little ones? You must have an Allen key.
Oh, I have done that. I've aired a radiator before.
Aired a radiator. There we go.
Many years ago, but I have done it.
And your least favourite politician, if you're allowed to say.
Oh, I don't really have a favourite one, so I don't know if I've got a least favourite
one. Well, the one that you'd least like to find yourself sitting next to on a plane journey to Las Vegas.
Oh.
For whatever reason.
Boris Johnson.
Boris
just
Johnson.
Just because I'd have to cut his hair.
I know what you mean by that. We'll come back to that. OK, then your East London thug name, Hayley, after Jack the Hat McVitie, would be Bill the Drill McCorbin.
Oh!
That sounds there, yeah.
I like that.
What did they do about him then? They sent Bill the Drill round.
And it rhymes as well, which
and
is
it rhymes
really
as well.
Nice.
And it rhymes as well. John Cullen has tweet, Tommy, my favourite toy as a child was my sister's talking doll, Cricket. By removing the speech cassette in the toy's back, I could replace it with my NWA tape, making Cricket rap. Wonderful stuff. Did they actually have cassettes in the back of these talking dolls then?
They must have done.
I don't remember that.
Where else would the sound come from?
Well, you did get talking dolls, and there was a talking action man as well. And there must have been a tiny cassette recorder of some kind in the doll's back, but very cheap because the doll itself only cost $9.99. And you would pull on the string, an action man would say something, just like the dolls. And let's have a look. 2-7 has tweet, time travel is only possible from the moment a time machine has been built. We haven't yet, so no one can travel back to now. No, but my point here, 7, is that if time travel is possible, in a million years' time, you can imagine the technology, a million years from now, it's quite possible that they'll be able to crack it. They'll have the technology, whatever that is. It won't be binary. And it won't have spark plugs. But they'll be able to do it. And that means that they will be able to come back to now. So in the nowness of now, time, this moment in time, time travel is happening, but we're not doing it. It's our great, 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 great to the power of 10 grandchildren, is the point that I was making there. What's our number? 0344 499 1000. You can text. It's 87222. Start your message with talk. Or you can tweet us. It's at Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for Ian Lee, who's taking a well-deserved. Hayley is in for Kath, who's taking a well-deserved. And Sam is still Sam.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
If I was one of those voice actors who could speak very, very quickly, and obviously they exist, and in fact there's a lot of work for them now, I'm not sure whether I would introduce it if I was at a party. And somebody, I got chatting to somebody, say, we're at a party, Hayley, I've just met you, you know, quite like you, actually, you know. I mean, you've got to imagine I'm younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you say to me, you know, what do you do for a living?
What do you do for a living?
Well, I can't actually do it, but do you think they would go into it? And they go, well, I'm somebody who speaks very fast at the end of commercials on the radio.
Here's the terms and conditions.
There's the terms and conditions, and it'll apply. Do you? I mean, there are people who can talk really quickly. I mean, Paul Ross talks really quickly.
Oh, he does, yes.
And Paul was telling us last night when he came in at 10 to 1 before his show that he does occasional bits and pieces for some of the shopping channels. And I think he's really good, because apparently his mum was a street trader, so, ergo. But he's somebody who could certainly speak as quickly as that if he was required and earning money doing it. But I suppose there must be voice actors whose agents say to them, no, they're not looking for somebody to advertise Hovis today, but they are looking for somebody who can speak very quickly. Would you like to go home and practice it? I suppose that's what they do. Or do they record it and then...
speed it up, I think.
Sam's nodding and he's technical. Can we do it then, Sam? I mean, could you record me saying something like terms and conditions apply and then you speed it up?
Yes.
So that it doesn't sound like a chipmunk?
Yeah. So the standard, you tend to be able to speed it up 10% and it still sounds not like a normal human being.
Yeah, you don't want to sound like the chipmunks. Do you remember the chipmunks or are you kids too young?
You can go a little bit further, but it does, yeah, it can end up sounding very... high-pitched and squealy. But
yeah.
Yes, that is what they do. They just speed up the last little bit.
I was reading today that, you know, people do things like they decide they're not going to use plastic for an entire week. Things like that. Well, this person decided that they would read the terms and conditions of all the little apps and software that they downloaded for an entire week. And they said that it amounted to literature almost as long as Moby Dick, over 150,000 words they had to read on all of these terms and conditions, which of course nobody ever does.
No,
do they
ever does.
No, I know, I can't remember who it was, but I'm pretty sure there was one company that had a terms and conditions on their website that had this sort of tagline that said, if you contact this number or email address, we'll give you X amount of money. And then it turns out that in about a year, only one person ever claimed it. Yeah, I can't remember who that was.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
It's like no one ever reads instructions.
No, you don't, do you? You think, I can do this, I don't need the instructions. Mind you, if you do read the instructions, they're often gobbledygook, aren't they? You know, on these things. Let's take a call. We'll rush to, since we're doing porn names this evening, somebody who has discovered that his porn name is Muscly Stud.
Hello, Tommy. How are you doing, fella?
I'm all right, thanks, Muscly, mate. How are you keeping? Are we doing a show as a East End thug then?
Muscly Stud, son. Muscly Stud is here.
Hey, how you doing? How's her indoors, mate? All right.
Yeah, do you know what?
No. What?
There ain't no her indoors. I got rid of her, bruv. I got rid.
All right.
Took me 3 months to get with her and 7 years to get rid. Thank God she's gone and I've kept the dogs.
All right,
happy days.
Happy days, right. So where is she, under the patio or what, mate?
No, mate.
Fair enough.
I got rid. I walked away on that one.
Yep.
Too much drama.
Not worth it, mate. Walk away.
We've all had a drink.
We'd all had a drink. Anyway, what are you selling tonight, Muscly?
No, I just want to pick you up on what you said about the old Jack the Act.
Oh, you better be careful there, mate. But go on, then. You can try me.
He wasn't an East London fella, mate. He was from Garrett Lane in Tooting, Southwest 18. That's where he grew up.
Really?
And he also lived in Mitcham for a little while.
I did not know that.
Yeah, serious, mate. Yeah.
But the thing is, it doesn't trip off the tongue so well, does it, a West London thug?
No, not West. South.
Well, that's even worse, isn't it? Arnando Iannucci doesn't do sketches about Southwest London thugs.
Don't be dissing the South London, brothers. The best part of London, the South London.
I couldn't agree with you more about that. I think North London is very, 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 very overrated. I do. Go north of the river, really, and I feel like a fish out of water.
Yeah, a bit too posh and pretentious for me, North Londoners. But you can't find
a chippy.
Not a good one. Well, there was a good one up in just off the Marylebone Road there.
I know, but they're few and far between. What I'm saying is, whereas in South West London, there is a chippy, 3 of them, on every parade.
Yeah, you got the old Rock and Row in Putney, around by Putney there, Rock and Row, that was a good one. Remember that one? On Putney, just as
Don't get me started about Putney, mate. Putney, I can do the walk from Putney Station to Craven Cottage with my eyes closed.
Yeah, we were
pick up your programme in the underpass.
ones.
Oh, Graham Chillenay, Arleds. Sorry, I don't know where this is going or why. What?
What was that?
When I was a boy, I used to go and watch the old Fulham play, didn't I, the Lily Whites? Can you, Lily Whites?
Yeah. Where did you live then, Tom? Where was your manor?
Oh, I don't like to say, mate, really.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. So it's all kept under me.
Let's say it was a little place called Felton.
Oh, Felton.
Near London Airport. You could read a book in your bedroom at midnight because of all the peripheral light from the runways. You know what I mean? Didn't need bulbs in our house.
It was on the A312.
Something like that, mate. Good old Felton. There was a great line in one edition of Minder where the character had a mate who was a struggling actor.
Yeah.
And he said to the struggling actor, "Have you got any work?" And he went, "Well, they asked me if I'd dress as a strawberry and stand outside the supermarket giving out leaflets for yoghurt." And Terry went to him, "Did you take it?" And the bloke just went, "No, I'm from Felton." And that was the first inkling I had that Felton was not what I thought it was when I was a boy, which was the Garden of Eden, because everyone thinks that where they were brought up was lovely and beautiful and normal.
Yeah.
That was my first inkling that Felton, perhaps the cold wind blew through Felton.
Yeah, when I was a young'un, a lot of the, when I was 15, 16, 17, a lot of the, because I grew up around Brixton, Streatham area in South London.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fellas I grew up with, we went the wrong way in life, ended up in Felton. There was a remand centre there, if I remember, young offenders.
We had a number of places of detention in Felton. There was what they used to call a borstal in Felton.
That's right.
And also a remand centre. In fact, I think the criminal population in Felton outnumbered the law-abiding population by about 4 to 1.
Yeah. I remember most of the boys in Tulse Hill Boys' School in Tulse Hill, which was one of the worst schools in the 70s. Most of them that come out of there ended up in Felton.
They probably did.
That's where their career started.
Happy days not, basically. So you're part of the woods, you're a Streatham boy, are you?
Streatham, Brixton, yeah.
I'll tell you what you notice, and that is that it's almost instinctive, even though I don't live anywhere near London anymore.
Yeah.
If I might find myself in conversation with somebody and I just notice something about them, I realise what it is as soon as I've walked away, and I have to go back to them and say, "Sorry, mate, but are you originally from South London?" And nine times out of ten they go, "Yeah, does it show?" And I go, "Well, no, not really. It's just kind of something instinctive that I had. It's not necessarily the accent.
No.
There's a sort of a way of walking, using your elbows. Hayley's actually doing it now. It's a pity we don't have anything on camera, but there is a way of walking in South London. Even if I say the word Hammersmith, I almost tilt my head as if I've got a pork pie hat on it.
And drop the H.
Sorry?
Drop the H.
And drop the H, yeah, Hammersmith. Do you know what I mean, mate? Yeah.
Hello, Hayley.
You're
how
right.
Are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm not, but what was it? I don't know what he called me now. Muscly, whatever it is.
Muscly Stud.
Muscly Stud, yeah. That's not the real name, obviously. My real name is Alfie. I spoke to Tommy a couple of times before. And Ian, obviously. But I prefer speaking to Tommy, to be honest with you. Bit hard to work with Ian. You've got to catch him right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you ever been interested in doing any sort of heavy work, Alfie? Because you sound as though you certainly, you know, got the charisma to be a door operative.
No, fella, no. I'm not. I've got a deep voice, fella, but that doesn't mean to say that I'm 6'8" and built like a brick, you know, doodah house.
One of them. As long as you've got a little bit of, as long as you can pretend you've got a little bit of menace about you.
No, mate, not even.
You're not interested in getting close protection for celebrities.
No, mate, I'm not bothered about all that old caber.
Because, you see, you can get a job. I mean, an awful lot of celebrities are so small that actually you only have to stand next to them and you look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well...
Don't you?
Well, I'm not a big fellow. I've just got a deep voice, bruv, you know what I mean?
But it's a very authentic voice indeed.
Well, you know, it's what you're given, isn't it, Tom? You know, it's what you're given, mate. But I'm not interested in all them celebrities.
Fair enough.
Don't do it for me. I like real people, bruv. I like real people and my dogs. I like my dogs.
Good talking to you, Alfie, mate. Take it easy. Talk to you again sometime. All right, fella.
Baked potato, Christian Slater, son.
Thank you. I've no idea what that last bit meant.
Do you
have any idea?
See you later.
Oh, see you later. Baked potato, Christian Slater.
I've never
Who's Christian Slater? Wasn't No, it's Christian Beale, I'm thinking.
He's an actor.
Is he?
Yeah.
What did he do?
I'd have to Google that, but he's
Christian
definitely
Slater.
An actor.
I like it. I'm going to do it myself. Next time I'm... Because I struggle with the kids' way of going, all right, later. Later.
Do you not do it on a text message, an L and an A? Oh.
No, I do not.
Oh.
If I did that, my family would take the mickey out of me enormously, and with some justification.
They
because
disown you.
It's not real.
Oh.
You cannot step outside of your generation bracket. It's pathetic. I won't do it. But baked potato, Christian Slater, I like that. I'm going to use that. Right, let's have a look at the tweet lines. Hi, Tommy, says Paul Yandel. Thank you for this. I am typing this now in the present. He's talking about the conversation that we had earlier about time travel. In my present stroke your past, yes. He typed this in his present. But his present when he typed this was our past. And you are reading it now in my future.
Yes, in his future at the time of his writing.
Fantastic, isn't it? Has this message travelled through time? Actually, it sort of has, yeah. No, nice one, Paul. That is an absolute 10 out of 10. Well played, mate. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Ivor Burns. Ivor Buns. I beg your pardon. Ivor Buns. We're giving people their porn names as they come to air this evening on the show. And this is Ivor Buns. Hello, Ivor.
Very right, Tommy.
Ivor's not much of a first name for a porn star, is it?
No. But we all remember Ivor Biggin.
Ah. Ivor Biggin, yes. We're not going to do his song, though, are we?
What was the song?
I'm not going to say.
Oh.
Because it's something I don't do. No man does.
Was it that bad?
What? Should I YouTube it?
What? The Ivor Biggin song?
Ivor Biggin. Yeah.
I think it charted, but they didn't have it on Top of the Pops. It starts with Ima. And then a word, and I won't use it.
Oh.
Does me good like it jolly well should. I'm a... No. Shh, Boyd. Now, what I was going to say was you could have had so many evocative porn first names, Ivor, that unless you know there's an Ivor Biggin, you could have been horny, you could have been oily, you could have been sleazy, you could have been rigid buns.
How did I end up as Ivor?
Because your first real name begins with J.
Ah, right, OK.
And it's on a list here in front of me.
Right, OK.
You see, you can't escape the rules.
What if I want to break the rules?
Then go right ahead, but don't let them trace it back to me on the radio, otherwise I'll have that all over again with Ofcom.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Don't I know it? Right, if you wanted to, we could... Yes?
I'm going to Berlin tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah.
What are you going to be doing
there? That's it. Well, it was my birthday yesterday, so me and about, nine of my friends are going.
I see.
And I don't know what to expect. Oh, yeah.
What are you looking for? What are you hoping for?
I don't know. There's 10 of us, and we're going to be sleeping in one room.
Well, that's doable, as long as you've had some of that very frothy beer that they seem to sell in the beer kellers. You'll be all right. You'll sleep.
Is it true that you don't get a hangover?
If what?
If what?
With the German beer.
Oh, I don't know. There's got to be something that a lesser performer than ourselves would make some sort of pun on Hanover and hangover, wouldn't we? But we're not going to do that.
I will tomorrow.
You will?
Yeah.
So how are you getting to Berlin? How are you getting to Berlin, the 10 of you? I hope not on a plane.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be
tempting, isn't it, to have a few before you take off? And they check you, you know, they check nowadays to make sure you're fairly sober before you fly, don't they?
I don't know. I am terrified of flying, so I probably wouldn't drink.
Now, see, most people would do that the other way around. They'd say, I'm terrified of flying, and so I need a gin and tonic before...
To calm your nerves, really?
Yes.
Yeah, but you can only drink a gin and tonic in the afternoon.
Yeah, but when you're flying, time doesn't matter. You know, you take off from Gatwick at 7:30 in the morning, and you're going to land somewhere and it's going to be 9 o'clock at night, even though you've only been in the air for 4 hours... When is the afternoon? There is no afternoon.
The afternoon is lying next to a pool, and it's the sun is beaming down on your lovely face.
Yes.
And you think, I fancy a G&T with a bit of ice and some cucumber in it.
Yes, it's very hard, though, isn't it, on holiday, deciding when you're going to have your first well-earned drink.
Yeah.
You know, round the pool at 10:30. Someone will come round if you're staying in that sort of a resort. Someone will come round and say, can they get you a drink, sir? And it's very hard to go, I'll just have a Coke.
Yeah.
Because you're on holiday.
Yeah.
So what are you guys going to say again?
What time do we start then?
Drinking?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds very staggy unless it's 5 men and 5 women who are going to Berlin with you.
No, it's all labs, but we are the least labby labs imaginable.
Well, go on. You better expand on that so that we can all feel more macho as a result of you.
I've never changed a light bulb.
But that's very laddie.
No way.
It is. Changing light bulbs. Women can do that. You know what I'm saying?
I've never done it.
I'm not endorsing that philosophy. I'm just saying... That lads don't bother to change a light bulb. They just get a torch out.
All right. I don't know. Maybe I am a lad then, and I didn't know.
Well, we need more to go on than the fact that you've never changed a light bulb. Who changes the light bulbs in your place, then?
I wait until my girlfriend's dad comes round.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, seriously.
So, supposing you had to change a light bulb.
Yeah.
What would you do? What would be involved? You'd get on a chair, presumably.
No, I'd just ignore it.
No, you've got to do it.
Why have I got to do it?
Because a new regime has come into the power in this country, a new military dictatorship, which has insisted on various things, otherwise pain of death or deportation... One of which is that you all have to change your own light bulbs. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Get past that bit. You're going to change your light bulb, either. Yeah. So what do you do?
I'll get a chair.
Yep.
And then I pull it out.
Yep.
Pull the light bulb out, I mean.
Ah, now that's what I was getting to.
Right.
How do you pull a light bulb out of its socket?
I'd assume you twist it.
How far?
How far is a piece of string?
That's how long is a piece of string, but I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
So do you think it's like unscrewing a bottle cap that you go round and round and round and round and then poof, the light bulb comes out?
I honestly have no idea.
You really haven't, have you?
No.
There are light bulbs that you do unscrew like that.
Right.
But the old-fashioned light bulb, which is what I think we're referring to, a bit like a childproof bottle of bleach, you have to push the light bulb in first and then give it a quarter twist.
Right.
And then it falls out. And here's the other thing. How can you be certain if you're holding two light bulbs now, because you've got the old one, haven't you, in one hand, and you've got the new one in your other hand, and somebody says something to you and you get distracted?
I know where you're going with it.
Go on, then.
Right, so surely the one that's Doesn't it go black or something when it's done?
Not really, no.
I know what you're talking about, though. He's not.
Hayley, do
he's
you?
Not completely bonkers.
No, no, I'm not saying he's bonkers, but there's a way that men know how to test which light bulb. Hayley's got her hand up like this is 3C.
Oh, I'm so excited because I think I know the answer.
There is a way men know of how to tell which of the light bulbs has blown and which one is the new one waiting to go in. Sam's got his finger in his mouth like Alfred E. Newman. And Hayley's got her arm stretched out and she's holding it with her other arm. Go on then, Hayley.
I hope I'm right now.
Yep.
The pressure. The one that's really hot and boiling and you can't touch it, you know, that's the one that you've just taken out. And
no.
The one that's
no.
cold
no.
hasn't been used.
No. No.
No.
Yes!
Terrible, that is.
No.
No. Come on, Ivor, then. You go, mate.
You shake it.
Yes. You
yeah,
shake
yeah.
it. Sam's looking confused.
Yeah. And what happens when you shake it?
You can hear that those parts of the filament that have cracked and snapped just make a very slight rustling noise inside the cocoon of the bulb. So you hear a sort of when you shake the light bulb. You couldn't use it like a maracas because it's not a very loud noise, but you just give it a little shake, the light bulb, and you can hear the broken filaments rattling around inside there. Ivor, will you stay with us?
I'd love to.
Just for a moment, OK? Because I've thought of another way of in which we can test whether or not you are, in fact, the least laddist person on his way to Berlin. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Callers going to air tonight using their porn names, which we've converted using a grid system that we have. So standing by to speak to us from Burnley is Creamy Member. But first we're with Ivor Buns, who's mobile. Ivor's on his way to Berlin because it's his birthday. Happy birthday, by the way, Ivor.
Thank you, Tommy.
On his way to Berlin with 10 lads who are not very laddish, correct?
That's true.
So here's the...
you've said so far is correct.
Here, then, is your acid test. You're on the plane.
Yeah.
And the plane has begun...
I'm in the car at the minute.
No, I know that. I'm saying I'm projecting in the future, at some point in the future, like tomorrow. Yeah. You'll be on the plane.
Yeah.
And the plane will start taxiing. And you've got your seatbelts on.
Yeah.
And a member of...
No. I don't put the seatbelt on.
That's illegal, isn't
Ooh.
It? Why not?
It's not illegal.
I think it is.
Yeah, it definitely is.
They could ask you to leave the plane if you refuse to put your seatbelt on.
Well, OK, I do put my seatbelt on then, if anyone's listening.
Good. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
A member of the cabin crew will now show you how your life jacket works.
Yeah.
Where do you look?
I don't know if I can say on radio.
Well, you haven't actually asked the acid question, which is the member of the cabin crew male or female?
Well, yeah, that's true. well, I'd look for the female one. And then I'd look deep into her eyes.
Good. That's much better.
Yeah.
Yes. That's very good. That's not very laddish, but it's behaviour that in this day and age we all endorse, especially me. Sometimes they quite enjoy putting the show on. Other times you can see they're thinking, I don't really want to be doing this, especially because there are some blokes there looking at me and it's not very nice. So we always have to respect we always have to respect those things.
It's true. Do you actually listen to what they're saying as well?
No. No, but I do want to see how piercing the whistle is always. Because they don't actually blow it, do they? They just mime it. They put it to their lips as if they're about to blow it, but I want to hear what it sounds like. Because it looks to me like the kind of whistle that goes... Hee. And that's not going to carry across the Atlantic, is it? Huh? Can you imagine that? How far would that travel in the fog, that sort of whistle? Well, have a great time in Berlin.
Cheers, Tommy. All the best.
Talk to you again sometime. Ivor Bunns. And as I mentioned, next is... Do I have to say this, Hayley?
Yes.
Creamy member.
That's not rude.
It is.
Only if you think it is.
Hello, Creamy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Creamy member, eh? That's a real one, isn't it?
That's the best one so far.
That's a good enough. I've made it the best stuff, you see. Creamy member. Yeah.
You'll be telling everyone you know tomorrow that you were on the radio as Creamy member.
Probably won't be, no. Not so sure about that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. It'll come out.
Well, do you think?
What? It'll come out. Somebody will drag it out of you.
No, my work colleagues are all in bed now, so I'm the only one left.
Did you say work colleagues?
I did indeed.
Are you a copper?
No.
You sure?
No, I'm not a copper, no.
Well, it's just I'm
a fix. I'm the opposite to Ivan.
What's that?
He was useless, weren't he? Eh?
Yes. Very.
Yeah, no, I'm not Ivan. I'm an engineer. I fix things and I build things and I make things and I do things.
It's just that most people refer to the blokes I work with. It's only ever police officers who refer to their blokes they work with as colleagues.
Really?
Yeah. It's a well-known fact.
All right. Well, I'll start saying mates then, because I don't want to be... I don't want people thinking I'm a copper.
No. Why not? There's nothing wrong with being a copper.
There's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing right with it either, is there? It's one of them, isn't it? I don't know. Not for me.
You're slightly coming and going. Where are you driving from and to this evening, Creamy?
I've started off at St Helens, over in Lancashire.
Uh-huh.
And I went over to Yorkshire. I went over to Hull.
Right.
Kingston upon Hull, and I'm now back over. I'm on my way now to Burnley, back home.
You're a Burnley boy, born and bred?
I am Burnley born and bred, yeah, but I don't sound like it, do I?
I don't know about that. I've not managed to get to Burnley yet. I would like to, very much.
It's a northern town, isn't it, Burnley? So it's
well, it is, yeah.
Accent from Burnley, so I don't really have an accent.
It's always been a name that's jumped out at me, partly because Burnley were... a big football team when I was a small boy, and so I always dreamed of what life must be like in Burnley, because being brought up in the south, I was aware that Burnley was very much in the north, and it became a sort of a motif for other Englanders, Burnley. And the club was owned by a legendary football owner, a man called, I think it was Bob Lord his name was. Does that name ring any bells with you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a big stand in the ground at Turf Moor. That's the Burnley ground, Turf Moor.
Yep.
One of the stands is named after
Bob Lord.
After Bob Lord stand. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really an icon in Burnley. Yeah.
See, I grew up with the impression that Burnley was a very, very tight knit community of mainly terraced houses with a fish and chip shop, a pie and chip shop, sorry, on every corner, and some pubs that everybody knew everybody else. And men wore flat caps, and women had washboards. And I know that that's a bunch of clichés, but when you're 8, 9 and 10 years old, you tend to deal in those kind of clichés. But I've never divested myself of the notion that Burnley is like that. And I'm sure 50 years on, it's a darn sight more diverse and contemporary than that. Or is it?
Oh absolutely, yeah. It is now. But your images would have been correct at the time. Yeah,
really?
That's pretty much how Burnley was when I was younger anyway. But nowadays, yeah, it's a very multicultural place now. There's a lot of different... there's a real mix of different cultures and people live there now. It's good.
Good.
I like it.
And have I hijacked the reason why you actually rang up this evening and, you know, contaminated you with all this porn star nonsense and talk of Burnley? Was there
I was just curious as to what my porn star name would be.
Ah.
So I was really just picking up to find out that. So, yes.
Glad to have been of service. Drive on, drive safely.
I can't wait to tell the missus.
I bet you do, too. I bet you do when you get in. Hey, love, I was on the radio tonight as Creamy member.
Yeah. Just say, shut up, are you dreaming?
Nice talking to you, Creamy. See ya. Just quickly squeeze in something from Mammoth Buns.
You see, how how can I be called mammoth? Do you mean mammoth as in elephants?
What other mammoths are there?
Well, no, because what a coincidence. I mean, why would I? I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, you're talking about time travel. Do you think predicting the future is a form of time travel?
Oh, definitely. Can you do it?
Well, yeah, because once I was in my flat and I said to myself, you know, a rock's going to fall out of the sky and hit the roof and I'm going to see it bounce on grass. And it happened within 10 minutes of thinking that.
Ah, now that is a particular type of ESP called prescience. I think a lot of us have it. Have you ever been walking along, minding your own business, and suddenly somebody pops into your mind, and then 10 seconds later they come around the corner?
Yeah, but the thing is, sweetheart, you know, because this rock, Tutankhamun, what they found in his tomb, a meteorite, and I'm supposed to be this king in the Bible, and I'm thinking, you know, why me and stuff, but. And another thing with the rock, I mean, my hobby, my belief, strange belief, is that I'm creating a universe for the world, you know, and things like that. So maybe finding that rock was not a coincidence, but a form of my mind traveling to the future to create this universe, and this rock sealed like a seal to it. But you know, I can't articulate what I want to say, but I mean, people, because I've got like schizophrenia, but it's not a violent schizophrenia, and I'm wondering if a lot of schizophrenia is scientists looking into the mind of predictions of futures and things, and you know, what do you think, or do you think that they're just classy with a schizophrenic and that's it? Are they looking into it now, or
who knows? Listen, Mammoth, so many questions.
Mammoth buns.
Mammoth buns.
So I can't believe it. All right, darling, take care. I hope I've... I'm trying to balance the skill, but,
you
know.
Do tell us what the little beeping is for in the background.
Yeah, I know. It's,
What is it?
Is it your dinner ready?
No, it's just a clock that suddenly started to activate this past day or so. But
understood.
Yeah, so, yeah, the future, you know, because there is a God, because I've actually met God, and...
OK, Mammoth, I know it's very tantalising, because I don't think I've ever heard a sentence begin quite as magnificently as "I have met God," but unfortunately we've got the news, and in broadcasting, as Hayley knows, and Sam, news is God.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Right, well, I learned two things yesterday, which is technically today, because we're on the air till one. And they are that, first of all, according to two people who've tweeted me, there are no filaments in modern light bulbs. This is from Roger, and also from Truth Today. Now that we have LED bulbs, they rarely bust and shaking doesn't work. But I'm not talking about LED bulbs, I'm talking about the old-fashioned bulbs that aren't LED. I don't know what the word is for non-LED bulbs. But I think they still have something that is equivalent to a filament, which is quite simply a coiled piece of very thin wire, which when electricity passes through it, it glows. And because the light bulb's got some sort of gas in it that magnifies the amount of glowing that the wire is doing, that you get light.
Sometimes when I take my clothes off at night, I get light.
I'll just park it there for a second.
Oh.
And on we go.
Sometimes when I take my clothes off at night, I get static and it lights up. It actually lights. Have you never had that?
Do the whole thing again, just without me interrupting, please. Slowly.
When I take my clothes off at night, sometimes I get static and it lights up.
Now, you see, if Barbara Windsor was given that line, Sid would go, ha, 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 ha. However, what are you wearing? You have to be so careful. I'm asking a woman, what are you wearing? I can see what she's wearing. I'm talking about what are you wearing when you take your clothes off that causes static?
Normally thermals. Seriously, long sleeve thermals.
Yes. Are you wearing thermals this evening?
No, I'm not today. It's a bit warmer today.
What
last
are your
week,
thermals
freezing.
Made of?
I don't know.
You can get silk thermals, can't you?
No, they're just bog standard Daymart. I don't know. I don't know, is the answer.
Man-made fibre.
Yeah.
I don't think cotton gives static.
Yeah. But I was just the first time it did it. I was like, oh, my God, it's electricity.
Hmm. Yes, you can get a blue crackle, certainly.
No, it's white light, bright white
light. White light, yeah. Really? So are you concerned then that you are... Because all we are is electricity. When we die, what happens is that the electricity stops. That's why the Victorians thought that electricity was so important that they used to stick their fingers in electrical sockets. Yes. In fact, someone was telling me yesterday that the Victorians used to be able to make an appointment with their doctor so that they could get electric shocks in the presence of their doctor just to make sure that they would be safe. And sometimes they thought it helped with their libido and also made them look younger and prettier.
But also could potentially kill them.
I don't know what the voltage was. Aren't there some machines you can buy to do away with crow's feet, which basically give your skin a little bit of an electric shock and tighten it up like that?
That sounds quite cool. I don't know. It's probably sold on Ideal World, where Paul works. They sell stuff like that.
We'll ask Paul when he comes in. If so, he's using one and it works. Because he's looking younger and younger, Paul Ross. He's very much a picture of Dorian Gray. Looking like a very young William Shatner, I was telling him yesterday.
Yes.
The other thing I learned yesterday is that, forgive me, there is an organisation in America called Potty Parity, which is campaigning for more women's loos.
We need them.
This is what I had not thought through. Like a great many other men, we thought that there are as many women's loos as there are men's loos, but that women take about 5 times as long as men in there.
Yeah, but you don't go to the loo as often either. So we need more loos because we go to the loo more.
Do you?
Yes. So how many times have you been to the loo during this show?
Once.
3 times.
Have you?
Yes.
So how many times do you go
to... Well, once an hour. That's normal, right?
Medical science should know about this. I bet there's nothing on the internet, though. So how often do you have to do a tinkle?
Well, once an hour.
About once an hour?
Yeah. I think that's quite normal. Men never go. My husband never goes to the loo.
Does he drink as much fluid as you?
Probably not. I drink more water than most people I know.
How much do you drink? Have you quantified?
2 to 3 litres a day, I think.
Right. So, I mean, purely in the interests, then, of furthering our mutual understanding of the human condition, roughly how long does one of your tinkles last?
Oh, not long, especially if it's an ad break. I'd say 30 to 45 seconds.
That's a long time for a tinkle.
Oh, no. Well,
no, I mean the actual tinkle.
Oh. Yeah, I'd say 20 seconds minimum.
Minimum?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Is it?
What, 20 seconds? Are you saying that you tinkle for this long, then? Hang on, steady, ready, from now... Tinkle, tinkle. Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle.
Oh, no, actually, I've got it a bit wrong.
Tinkle, tinkle.
No, probably 10 seconds.
Tinkle, tinkle.
Stop.
Stop. That was 10 seconds.
Yes.
Right. And that's counting the sort of... It starts slow... It sort of tapers in and tapers out, doesn't it?
Yes.
OK. And what kind of quantity do you suppose you're delivering? Half a cup full? I don't know.
I've never measured it. I don't really... I don't know.
This is really interesting.
Don't
I didn't
carry
know any
on.
Of this.
I like talking about loos.
I've been married to my wife for 40 years. I've never had this conversation. So do you ever, like men do... Here's a man, right? We go out with our mates, and because the conversation's so interesting, we're on our third pint when we realise that we're bursting. And getting there, actually, it can be quite a... Oh, blimey. And you have to almost walk differently, but you walk quickly, OK? And when you get there... And you eventually start, you make this noise. Ah! Do women ever do that?
Only if I've been holding on for a long time.
Right, you can hold on for a long time.
Not as long as men can, I don't think.
No, I
Because I know
think
when
so
I'm either. Out for the day with my husband or whatever, I've gone 10 times before yes. he's even thought about going, which I just find very strange. But then I notice it working here with the men here. Like, Sam's probably not gone to the loo so far in the show. Sam, have you gone to the loo yet?
When was the last time you went for a tinkle, Sam?
About 20 minutes ago.
Ah.
See, I have this family thing, though. We all go loads.
Your family go to...
Yeah.
Your family tinkle a lot?
We all... Yeah. We're bad.
Now, you see, now, I dare say you, dear listener, are thinking this as well. I've never bothered to log or calculate the number of times I go and how much.
I'm a little bit obsessed with the loo. Like, just everything about it. I like a clean toilet.
Yes, yes.
I like them nearby. I don't like them to smell.
No.
So I probably overthink the toilet quite a lot.
Hmm. And, of course, you girls don't have a prostate, do you? Or do you?
Women don't have a prostate. I don't think so.
Right. So men have a prostate, and are, at a certain point in life, the prostate, which sort of presses on the bladder, needs to be kept an eye on for a bunch of reasons, but it can press on the bladder such that the male bladder capacity is reduced, and so men find themselves tinkling just a little bit more than they used to. It's like that Barack Obama joke. There was this thing when Hillary Clinton was standing, and they were saying, you know, who would you most trust if the phone rang at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, to be president of the United States? Because she was, you know, making out that she was a seasoned politician and she could handle the nuclear Third World War scenario better than Barack. And after he'd done his 8 years as a president, Obama did a very funny speech to say goodbye. And one of the things he said was, of course, during the last 2 or 3 months as president, I'm very able to handle the 3 a.m. call because I tend to be up having a tinkle. So your bladders are smaller than ours. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, not really. And also, if I laugh, then I need a wee.
Oh, no, I have heard about this and I've seen adverts for products.
Oh, yeah. It's not that bad. I don't need to buy a product, but don't make me laugh if I need a wee.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think men ever, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong.
I've
never had this conversation with anybody else, by the way. So it's quite uplifting, it's nice, isn't it, to know what it's like to be other people. No, I've never heard a man say that, don't make me laugh, otherwise I'll...
No.
Or squeeze me, don't hug me.
Yeah,
well, I can see that.
That makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Or sneeze.
Sneeze?
Yes.
You could tinkle accidentally if you sneezed.
Yes.
So what are the... You see...
Why are you so confused about this?
I'm confused about two things. I'm confused about the process itself. I'm also slightly confused and disappointed in myself that I've never bothered to think about it before. Because it's such a fundamental thing, you know, and we should.
We all have to do it.
So what I find myself wondering is whether the muscles that control keeping the bladder closed in the male are the same muscles, but obviously in female form, in the female. Because if you were to take a bladder out of a woman and a bladder out of a man, you wouldn't necessarily know which was which, would you? The differences in that part of our anatomy happen beyond the bladder.
Isn't it the pelvic floor?
Yes. Now, I know that the pelvic floor is not your friend, is it, women?
Not if it's weak.
Exactly. So what is the pelvic floor?
I'd say it's like the gatekeeper, isn't it?
You really are having a way with words this evening, and I'm going to see it as the gatekeeper. OK.
Just trying not to be crass.
Not long ago... because I found myself watching Darcy Bustle on Strictly Come Dancing, I YouTubed her to discover that she was doing some yoga lessons. So my wife and I got them up in the living room and we started doing yoga with Darcy Bustle.
Right.
And mainly she was working on the pelvic floor. But she did not go so far as to say, if you're a man, you haven't got one. She just said, these are very good exercises for your pelvic floor. So this is really interesting, isn't it, Sam? Do you know if you've got a pelvic floor?
No idea.
F-L-O-O-R, that is, obviously.
Yeah.
Not the other spelling. Hayley's looking it up.
I need to know.
I need to know. We all need to know. All of human life is here.
Yes.
What,
you do.
Men have a pelvic floor. Yeah. So what is a pelvic floor?
A man's pelvic floor muscles support his bladder and bowel, obviously. The urine tube and the back passage all pass through the pelvic floor muscles.
Right, and the pelvic floor muscles presumably ring round some part of the pelvis.
Yes. I feel like I'm in science class. I'm looking at one of those diagrams. Do you remember those textbooks you used to have at school?
Yes.
With the diagrams in it?
Yes.
And you used to sit there for hours looking at one little piece of it.
Hmm.
That's like that.
Anyway, we entered this territory free of spirit because in America there's a movement that's been started called potty parity. And that's simply to make sure that there are sufficient women's toilets placed next to the men's toilets. The question is, what is the right ratio? Because if, as Hayley has revealed to us this evening, women tend to need to tinkle up to three times more often than men, even though the actual quantity isn't obviously three times as great, the bladders being smaller and possibly more sensitive. Couple that with the fact that women tend to spend longer in the toilet, and the potty parity people acknowledge that the average amount of time that a woman spends is 90 seconds. The average amount of time a man spends is 40 seconds.
40?
4-0.
And you thought my 20 seconds was long?
Not actually tinkling, from the time of entering and leaving is 40 seconds for men.
So how long is the actual
tinkle? Into the door. Well, into the door, assuming that there's a stall, unzip. You're in business within about 7 seconds of getting through the door. Probably about 10 to 15. Replace your clothing. What do you call it? Adjust your clothing. That's what they say. Gentlemen must adjust their clothing before leaving. And then to the sink. Do women wash their hands after every tinkle?
Yes.
Well, they don't need to look so...
I'm disgusted that you even asked me that question.
Well, not necessarily, because a doctor once said to me, you should really wash your hands before you have a tinkle. More important than washing them afterwards.
Why?
A doctor told me that. Why? Because if you're in contact with somebody who has a cold or the flu germs, it's highly likely that those germs are going to be on their fingers. All right? And then they'll transmit that to surfaces, and then you will pick up those germs on your fingers. And the way in which most of these germs enter our system is from fingertip to genitalia contact. That's what I was told. They don't go in through the nose or the mouth, which is what we think. You know, somebody sneezes on the train and we go, we hold our breath, don't
we? Yeah.
For as long as we can. But that's not how they get in. They get in, we might have the cold germs on our fingers and we might rub our lips or something. That's one way.
Mm.
But this doctor said to me, if you really want to make sure that you don't contract a cold, having got it onto your hands, wash your hands before you have a tinkle. Anyway, how thoroughly do women tend to wash their hands in the loo? Is it a complete lather up?
Yeah, with the soap where you have to push it down.
Yep.
Yep. And if it's empty, I get really angry.
Yes. So what makes me really angry is you go to a loo you've never used before and all the taps are different now. You don't just turn a tap and the water comes on. You stand there looking at this tap and it's got nothing to touch.
The one where you have to wave your hand.
There's no handle.
Yeah, well,
you try that. You wave your hand underneath it and still nothing. See, well, what am I going to do? So you get your elbow and you press it on the top of the tap thinking, it's a depression thing. And that doesn't work either. So you wait until some bloke comes next to you and he knows, and so you see, and so then you get a tinkle. But I often can't be bothered to do a massive surgeon-like washing of the hands, you know, with the fingers going upright like the surgeons do, and get it all lathered, 15 seconds of lathering. You look like a, you know, OCD or something, and then rinsing it off and putting it underneath that blow-drying machine. Do women use those blow-drying machines?
Yes. A hand dryer.
And do you do what men do, which is to put it under there for about 7 seconds and then walk out rubbing your hands on your jeans? You do?
Something like that, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But that takes you guys 90 seconds, whereas us guys it's 40 seconds.
Yeah, but we have more to fix. So
I'm not saying you're slow or anything. I totally understand you've got to undress almost completely and so on and so forth. But I'm just trying to work out what the potty parity people in America are trying to achieve as the ratio between men's loos and women's loos. Because if women go to the loo three times more often for a tinkle and spend approximately twice the the amount of time in there, and you actually need five times as many women's loos as men's for there not to be queues. That's their big thing, potty parity, the fact that there are, you often see queues outside women's toilets. You, you do, don't you?
Of course. If you go to a theatre and during the interval, do you not see a long
line?
Yeah.
Oh, as the way things were at football matches, women would miss the first 20 minutes of the second half and not really care, actually, but that's another matter.
I wouldn't. I'd go into the men's.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Have you? What happened?
Oh, just because you don't want to miss the start. It's normally during... I'd never been to a football game, so it would be a theatre for me.
Okay.
I've a few times when you hear that bell go and there's, like, still 50 people in front of you, just run into the men's quickly. And? There's still cubicles.
I know, yeah, and?
There's no difference.
Is it, but then nobody looks and goes, what are you doing in here, young lady?
Don't really care. I want to see my show.
Fair enough. I wouldn't do that. Would you do that, Sam? I struggle with... Sometimes you see disabled, you know, the big door.
Oh, yes.
And both the men's cubicles are occupied. So I think now the sign on the door says disabled, but often it also says man and woman. So there's a little symbol of a woman, a little symbol of a man, which I interpret as meaning you don't have to be disabled. If the other facilities are occupied, you may use the disabled toilet, but I still feel bad.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, it's like the one that I hate here. So I know the toilets we have here, the men's and the women's, identical. They're just four cubicles, but two happen to have the sign of a man outside, two have the sign of a woman outside. And I know I've seen some people that if all the men's are, both men's are in use, they'll go and pop into the one of the women's.
Here?
One. Yeah, here. I can't do that. Even though I know it's the exact same.
No.
I'm not, no.
So you've never been?
No.
In the women's toilets?
No.
At this radio station, this complex of radio stations?
No.
But you still think that the women's are identical to the men's?
Apart from the hand wash, we have pink hand wash.
Well, I was going to test Sam on this one. I'll test you as well. Hayley, have you ever been in the men's here?
No, I haven't.
No?
No.
So you two guys have never been in the opposite sex toilets?
No, I've only seen...
At this complex of radio stations?
I've only seen from when, like, the door's been wide open because there's a cleaner in there or something.
Yeah.
And it looks the same to me.
Well, I don't know if it's different from when I did this as an experiment, but the women's toilets are subtly different from the men's because they are cleaner and more fragrant.
Yes.
When I say cleaner, they are. They look as though they've just been done. At any time of the day and night, they look as though they've just been cleaned. Whereas the men's toilets tend to be, there'll be a few of those big, thick napkin things just sort of not quite properly put in the bin, and there'll be the soap will be in a bit of a state, you know, not in a disgusting state or anything, just what, you know, men do. But yeah, they are different, and also there tends to be a fragrance in the women's toilets, an aroma, a pleasant aroma. Have you got bottles of those little things that you stick sticks in and they give off
a diffuser? I love a diffuser.
But is there a diffuser in there?
No, I love a diffuser.
Yeah, okay. Right, we'll return to this and other all-important topics. This is what Talk Radio is all about. The telephone number, if you're interested in getting involved, is 0344 499 1000. You can text 87222, start your message with Talk, and that will cost you 25p. Or you can tweet, it's @TalkRadio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
There's a story which is sort of breaking now. I'm not quite sure how it's going to be handled tomorrow. Well, today, technically, it's 12:30. So today is technically Friday. But let's call it tomorrow because it's going to be there for the news agenda to digest and put before us. And they'll have time to think about it. We've got time to talk about it. And I have to say, and I have a normal human interest in the paranormal. You know, the Loch Ness Monster when I was little was something I was very interested in. UFOs, Bigfoot, Yeti, fantastic ghosts, you know, great.
Loch Ness Monster.
The Loch Ness Monster, when I was 14, I really, really, really wanted to go and spend a whole school summer holiday in a little tent next to Loch Ness with a pair of binoculars. Me and Nicholas Witchell. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's a BBC court reporter now. He was a newsreader then, but he's come out and admitted that he was a bit of a Loch Ness Monster freak when he was a kid. He was in the Royal, what was it, the Loch Ness Monster Investigation Bureau.
Sounds very proper.
I just would have been happy just to sit there for 6 weeks, just seeing if it would stick its head out of the water. So I think my interest in the paranormal has been seasoned through the years. It's still there, but I'm not expecting any surprises. However, and this is a big however, from Chile come photographs of something which looks as though it's a fake, but in fact has been validated by science. And it's got everybody in a little bit of a tiz. And what it is, and as I say, it's been DNA tested by the Genome Research Organisation. And what it is the mummified remains of a 6-inch tall human being. Now, when I say mummified, that doesn't mean that it's 2,000 years old. Mummified merely means that it's been well preserved. And this human being, 6 inches tall, has been estimated as being about 6 to 8 years of age and died only about 40 or 50 years ago. I showed you the photograph, didn't I, just before we came on air. It was flashing around some of the news agencies on the internet, and of course you're a bit cautious with the internet and paranormal things. But it's now made its way onto the BBC news website. So I think it's going to be something of some interest in the newspapers and probably on Mike's show breakfast time this morning. I'll just read you quickly what it is. To describe it, good listener, you'd probably need to grab your phone and have a look yourself. It's pretty easy to track down, I would have thought, if you're awake enough to do that, or on your laptop. It says, tests on a 6-inch long human skeleton from Chile confirm that it represents the remains of a newborn with certain mutations in key genes. Despite being the size of a fetus, initial tests have suggested that the bones were of a child aged 6 to 8. These highly unusual features prompted wild speculation about its origin. And now DNA testing indicates that the estimated age of the bones and other anomalies may have been a result of genetic mutations. The remains were first brought to the attention of the world of science by somebody who, quite understandably, I think, said, I think I might have discovered an alien. Because that is what it slightly looks like.
It does look like one. It looks like a small one.
Slightly enlarged, larger than you would expect, cranium. And also what looks like a slightly reptilian jaw. Mm. But otherwise, other than that, a perfectly formed small human being. Let's go to the phones. We won't necessarily dwell on that, but I thought as it's kind of like interesting late-night breaking news, I'd mention it. I have a member, since we're playing contributors by their porn names, is on line three. Ivor, good evening.
Good evening, Tommy. I hardly recognised myself there, but I caught on. Can I just say, you were the first person I phoned about 15 years ago, the first person I spoke to in the radio. So you initiated me. And I've only maybe phoned about 2 or 3 people since then. But I'm glad to hear you're back on sporadically.
Sporadically is the way to view it. Being sporadic is fantastic. Being peripheral, or peripatetic is another one.
Yep.
Peripatetic.
I like that word.
Do you like peripatetic?
Yeah, yeah.
You get to say it. Go on.
I can't say it.
Oh, come on. All peripatetic.
Peripatetic.
Peripatetic. Can you say peripatetic, Ivor?
Peripatetic.
You don't have to give it the posh duh.
Oh, it's not posh.
It is posh. I live in Chichester, and if you're posh, you call it Chidester. Sam, right. Can you say peripatetic?
Peripatetic.
Do you know what it means?
No.
Sporadic.
Sporadic, though, it has negative connotations because it's normal use with sporadic violence, isn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, but sporadic success. People talk about something having sporadic success.
Yeah.
I wonder why, because spores are quite sporadic, aren't they? And I wonder if there is a connection there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's how penicillin was discovered, wasn't it? Alexander Fleming put a little dish, a culture dish, on a windowsill to see what how the culture would develop. And then he went off and he had his lunch. And when he came back, all the bad bacteria was dead. And that was because some penicillin spores had blown in through the window and landed on it.
Right, OK.
And, you know, great day for mankind.
I'm allergic to penicillin, random fact.
Isn't that funny? People are, aren't they? Yeah. And they say there's a God. You being allergic to penicillin, what can you take for that, then?
Nothing, you just don't take it.
I know, but surely you must be able to take something to as an antidote to your allergy for penicillin. If we rushed you to the doctors because you'd accidentally ingested some penicillin, what would they give you?
I don't know. 03444991000. Do we have a doctor in there?
10 minutes, probably. Anyway, Ivor, sorry, I interrupted your train of thought.
Yeah, I do have a point to make on toilet habits, but before I do, I may have missed it. And if I have, then that's why I'm asking. But if I haven't, then I'd like to know. And it's maybe 2 or 3 months ago when you were on before, you were having almost a nightly conversation with a chap that was staying in a tent, I think
Steve.
It was.
Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was wondering how that developed. Did you ever meet him? Did you... Is he doing better now? Do you know anything about him since
then?
Well,
yes. Thank you for asking.
It was very moving listening to him. He was a genuine character.
What I did was I took the train to the level crossing where he said he lived.
Yeah.
And on my way I started phoning him because he had a mobile phone. And I started phoning him, but he didn't pick up. So I got to a level crossing where he said he lived, and there were a number of shops and a couple of pubs either side of the level crossing. And so I went looking for him. And I looked in one pub, and he said that he lived in a pub car park because the landlord didn't mind. And it wasn't a straightforward pub car park. It was one of those car parks that's around three sides of the pub.
Okay.
Couldn't find him in that one. Crossed the road, went to the other one, and the car park was just as complicated, and it was divided into several sections because there was also a slightly complicated pub garden, and I thought maybe he was there, tent.
Yeah.
Couldn't see him. So I went to the station car park because I thought he meant the station car park, but I thought that was unlikely that you get permission to live in a station car park. But anyway, I had a look. Couldn't find him. So no sign of him. So either... On the occasion that I went to meet him, and, you know, I wasn't going to patronise him because he said he didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask him if he could spare a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find him. So I decided that either that day he wasn't there, or maybe I got something wrong about his location.
Yeah, from memory, what I took from it was that he wasn't so much in a car park, but he was behind one of the pubs as if it was in...
Yeah.
Undergrowth or overgrowth, whatever you call it, just in a shrubbery, but not necessarily in a car park. So
I couldn't find him, and I didn't like to ask.
Right.
Both pubs were open when I went, you know, and I'm a normal man. It takes something for me to not go into a pub when I have two good reasons to go into a pub. One, because it's a pub and it's open, and two, because I'm trying to trace somebody who says that they live behind a pub in a tent. But no, I couldn't trace him either. Thank you for asking.
I hope he phones in tonight or tomorrow then, just so he lets us know how he is.
Mm. So do I. But yes, I did, as I said I was going to, I did try and get to him.
Yeah.
As I think anybody would.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if anybody would, but I think that's credit to you for doing that.
Well, okay, thank you.
Can I make my toilet point now?
Yeah.
I have... I'm view that says that it depends on how you are psychologically in terms of going to the toilet.
Yes.
What I find is that if I'm in the house and I know I'm going to be in the house maybe for 6 hours or 8 hours,
yes,
I can go that whole time without even thinking about the toilet.
Yes.
But if I know, within that time, if I know I have to travel for an hour, say,
yes,
then I couldn't leave without going.
Yeah. That's very, very true, actually. Thank you for pointing that out. Mm. I think we all know that, but we didn't. We kind of not computed it. Thank you.
So do you think the reason why women go more is because we're naturally a bit more anxious
as
creatures? Yeah.
They're pushing back the boundaries of human understanding here. I like it. I like it a lot. Because I'll tell you what I can't do sometimes, Ivor. Well, it happened to me once, and that is if there's people on either side of me, I can't go.
I avoid urinals now. I just don't go to urinals at all. I have to use a stall. No, I can't.
You can't use a stall at all?
No, I can use a stall.
But you can't go in the cubicle?
I can't go in the cubicle. No, sorry, I can use a cubicle. Sorry, I've got the wrong terminology. I can use a cubicle, but I can't use a urinal or a trough or anything like that if there's someone going to be standing next to me. I have to go into the cubicle.
We'll come back to that, but I've just got a flash. Stephen has just phoned in. And he doesn't want to come on.
Okay.
But he wants me or us to know that he is behind the toilets next to the pub.
Okay.
Is he still with you, Sam? No, he's gone. Because there's two pubs, one either side of the level crossing.
Right, good.
I just need to know from Stephen which pub it is next time you speak to him, if you do get a chance. Yeah.
Oh, well, he's still listening, and then we'll still be okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I do have to use a public loo and sit down, I'm always a bit trepidatious about that.
Yeah, it's
whereas
something.
Women don't care, do you?
I care, but more terrifying is the thought of getting your bits out in front of other people. How you use a urinal, I just
how many
don't
is
know.
Urinal? Yeah, yeah.
That's I used just... to be okay. I used to be okay with it, but not so much. Not so much now.
There's a certain amount of posing goes on the urinal in a very low key way, but. What I don't like doing is if I go into the urinal and the chap next to me is tinkling away, and I begin tinkling, and then I realise that my tinkle is going to end before his, and he started before me.
You're very competitive.
Because that makes him more of a man than me somehow, somewhere in my confused and slightly distorted mentality. So I will mime going on a bit longer.
It's quality, not quantity, Tommy.
You fake it.
Yeah, you do. You stand there. Yes. Unless, of course, you're not making any noise, because if you want to really assert yourself at the urinal stall, you really direct a powerful jet against the little circular grill at the bottom, because that makes a really loud, nice, loud, manly noise.
But you don't go so far as to... and miming folding motions when you're finishing up, do you, Tom?
No.
That would be going too far.
No, but you do have to somehow just sag slightly at the knees as you adjust your clothing.
You do. You
suggest that you need to make room in there for what's coming back.
You have to make extra room because the prospect of a nip would be, in that kind of situation, would be...
Yes. Yes, I do know a situation where the fire brigade were once called somebody who... zipped too enthusiastically. Oh, terrible business. Seriously. Fire brigade were called. I know. I don't think they had a particular piece of equipment, by the way, that was devised specifically for that problem in mind. And to the best of my recollection, what they did was they said, OK, well, look, well, what we're going to do is we're just going to have to pull the zip back down again. Oh, no. So what the officer did, which I think was really clever, he said, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull the zip back down again on a count of three. Oh, no. And so the officer went, are you ready? And he went, yeah. And the officer went, you're OK, I've already done it.
Oh.
Isn't that clever?
Yeah.
Because thinking about, two, three, wow. I was so focused on that the fire officer did it.
Yeah, it's often the anticipation, isn't it?
Exactly. Ivor, thank you for your call, and thank you for caring about Stephen.
No, I'm glad he's okay. That's good.
Nice talking to you. Paul Ross will be here in about 20 minutes with his show, but hopefully he'll put his head round the door a little bit before and we can chew the fat, which is always nice. This is Tommy in for Ian Lee. Hayley's here, and so is Sam, and this is Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So we're just about heading towards Paul Ross time, and let's just sum the evening up, shall we, Hayley? We began by talking about the fact that data is coming to get us.
Yes.
And we spoke to a very lovely lady called Silky, who explained to us just how thoroughly they are tracking everything that we do electronically. But the big bit that I took away from that conversation is that, according to Silky, they're using artificial intelligence.
And I think the biggest thing I took away was that even the stuff you have in draft, they want that too, and I find that fascinating.
Oh, when you compose an email or a text message but don't send
it. Yeah, yeah.
They've tracked that.
Fascinating.
And they're using that information as well, largely for commercial purposes, it has to be said. I don't see a political Big Brother on the horizon quite yet, but I do see the Big Brother equivalent happening in the commercial world, where we get asked if we want to buy things that we'd hardly noticed that we were interested in, because the artificial intelligence has established that if you like this, you'll probably want to buy that.
Well, they do that even now on Amazon.
Yeah.
People who bought this normally bought that.
I find it quite nice being presented with things that I probably might buy if I decided I could waste that much money.
Yeah.
Because you think to yourself, yeah, that's an overcoat. I'm never going to buy that overcoat. But because I went looking at overcoats, because I've thought to myself, one day I'd like to spend £400 on an overcoat. I would. I never will. But I'd like to think about it.
Mm.
And so every so often, having browsed overcoats for men, cashmere overcoats for men, I'm never going to buy one. But it's quite nice when I'm browsing, doing something else, you know, looking up a recipe for chicken, and then suddenly there's this £400 overcoat appears next to me. It's quite nice. I turned my phone on during the commercial break just to make sure that there were no messages waiting for me that I needed to act on as soon as I left the studio, and now I feel completely amateurish.
You can't just put it on silent.
No, I'll turn it off. I like it turned off. And then we got on to, you know, talk about from the sublime to the ridiculous. We went from talking about data collection and why Facebook is high in everyone's minds at the moment to porn stars.
Yes.
And it worked.
It worked. I thought it was hilarious.
People calling the show came to air using their porn names.
We had Musley Stud.
Yes.
Ivor Buns.
Yes.
Creamy Member.
Don't say that one. Please don't say that
one. Oh, it was my favourite.
Oh, no.
And Mammoth Buns.
Yeah, Mammoth Buns.
And Ivor Member.
And everyone was very happy to be that, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you happy completely with your name? Or would you change it given the chance?
No, I like my one.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes it would be nice to... I've always wanted to be Connor McNamara. I don't know why, I just think it's a great name. Sam, don't you think Connor McNamara is a hell of a name?
Yeah, yes, it just rolls off the tongue.
Doesn't it sound great? I mean, yeah. If you're Connor McNamara, you're halfway there. You know? It's like Boris Johnson. I mean, apparently his real name's Mick or something. But call him Boris and whoa! Mm. You know, you've got an act. Adolf Hitler, since whenever you say Boris Johnson now, you think of Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was originally going to be Adolf Schickelgruber. And he himself said, thank goodness they adopted the name Hitler in my household at the time I was born, because there's no way I could have been Führer of the Third Reich if my name had been Adolf Schickelgruber. He said they just couldn't have... How would they have chanted it at Nuremberg? Heil Schickelgruber wouldn't have worked. So, you know, a name is very important. Sam's a good name, I think, for a bloke.
Yeah, the problem I find with it is that it's too... Everything sounds like it. It's too short and...
Are you Samuel on your birth certificate?
No.
You're just Sam?
No.
Oh,
this is interesting.
Oh, tell us.
My name, my birth certificate, and my birth certificate alone, I believe, is Sammy with an I.
Oh, lovely.
S-A-M-I?
Double M.
Double M-I?
Yeah.
How come? Have you asked your parents why they...
Nope.
No?
I think it's cute.
Do you?
Things are... When I was in school, I was like... Totally in denial of it, hence why everything says Sam. Like, even my name on registers, it's just, it was always Sam. And I think literally the only thing is my birth certificate.
Did you know all along that your name is Sam?
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I know.
Your passport as well, though, right?
Nope.
Oh.
So what does your passport say?
Sam.
Just not, but not Sammy?
Nope.
Is that legal?
Yeah.
I thought you had to have your name on your passport the same as on your birth certificate.
No, I don't think so, because, like, what if when people change their name?
Yeah, but you haven't changed yours.
No, but that law then has to be different. It can't be a law that you have to have your passport name the same as your birth certificate, because...
Yeah, but I thought that when you applied for a passport, you normally sent off a birth certificate or something, don't you? To prove who you are.
See, my name's slightly different from what's on my birth certificate. And one day after I'd committed a small motoring offence, I had to take my driving licence into the police station. And because the police there knew the name that I go under, and therefore knew that the name that I go under was different from the name that's on my driving licence, I got given the third degree.
Gosh.
I was practically thrown in a cell because my name that I'd given them on, you know, when they apprehended me for the offence, which was, by the way, distributing an explosive substance on the Queen's Highway. My petrol cap wasn't on properly.
Oh, you're kidding. Really?
Yeah, I got fined and the rest of it.
And they
magistrates court, the whole business.
And they believe they were doing it for fraud afterwards.
Well, it wasn't, yes. Yes. They were on the way to that. So Sammy, that's quite interesting. See, whenever I hear the name Sammy, there's only one place my mind goes. And that's, there used to be a comedienne called Joyce Grenfell, who used to have this comedy act that she did in which she was a primary school teacher. And it was audio only. It was a record. But you heard it on the radio quite a lot. And she kept... It was just her being a primary school teacher. And I can't do it. It was very funny. But she just said every 30 seconds or so, "Don't do that, Sammy." Just like that. And left you wondering what it was that little Sammy was doing. So whenever I hear the word Sammy, I always think of her.
Did your mum like Sammy Davis Jr. or something, do you think?
I don't know. But, yeah, literally my parents... They both still, they call me Sammy, but they're the only two that I'll allow it, because I'd find it weird.
Why coming. The I bit, though? Because Sammy, yeah. S-A-M-M-Y.
That beats me.
You're not curious?
Not really. Because, again, it's a name I don't use.
But supposing there's a story behind it?
No, I'm pretty sure that's not.
There isn't?
No.
I bet there is. There
needs
always
to
a
be,
story.
Really. Because it is quite unusual. I know we're not talking that long ago, but people were a bit more conventional. How old, Sam? 20-something?
24.
25. And here comes Paul. Let's find out why Paul's called Paul. Hello, Paul. We're talking about names.
Hello.
How people end up being called the names that they're called and whether they know why they're called.
I know exactly why I was called Paul, because my real name is John. My first name is John Paul Ross. On all my cheque cards, on bank books, birth certificate, because my dad's name was John. I was born on his 18th birthday in an era of the late 50s when it was the dad who went down and registered the birth. So he said, "My firstborn, fruit of my loins, here he is. He's going to be John Paul Ross." And my mum said, and she was only 17, "I can't have two Johns in the house. It'd be chaos."
No.
So I've always only been called Paul. Irritatingly for me, when I was about 11, at that irritating age, at secondary school, I discovered I was actually John. So I put on all my essays... J. Paul Ross, J.P. Ross, to be a bit pretentious. And, of course,
certainly.
When we used to get cheques, in the days when cheques were written, they turn up written for Paul Ross, the bank wouldn't cash them, because my bank said John Paul. My next brother down, my dad thought, aha.
Right.
He's called Simon John Ross, because my dad thought the second name, I'll get a John. My mum's only called him Simon. Finally, he came up with Jonathan Stephen Ross, brother number three, who we all call Jonathan or John John. My dad's only ever called Jonathan John. So he finally got his way, even though my mother resolutely still calls Jonathan by his proper name.
His house is awash with Johns.
Oh,
gosh.
But then the next two brothers haven't got John, and there's Miles Stephen, because my dad loved Miles Davis, and my mum likes him as well, and then Adam Gregory, and Gregory was my fault, because I'd seen a film with Gregory Peck called Spellbound, directed by Hitler, Hitchcock, and it's a very disturbing film about amnesia. Salvador Dali did the sets for it, it's a great film, and I just fell in love with the name Gregory. So I nagged my mum into calling him Adam Gregory Ross, even though my next brother down, Simon, wanted to be called Superman.
But you see,
would it be great if you called Adam Superman Ross?
Yes! And what's wrong with that?
A friend of mine's got a younger brother called Popeye as his middle name, because he kind of nagged his mum and dad into... And on the birth certificate, it's got Popeye as the middle name.
Wow.
When I worked in an American camp, there were two kids who turned up. One was 9 and one was 7, and they were brothers. And I found out that the eldest one was called Yogi. And so I made a beeline for the cabin where the younger one was. And, Boo-boo.
Yeah. Oh, isn't
that
great? You see,
well, isn't that awful, actually?
Well, I went to school with three West Indian brothers, great kids, and they were called Lenroy, Henroy and Benroy.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a kind of traditional thing, Lenroy, Henroy and Benroy. Why not? Like Huey, Dewey and Louie from Donald Duck.
And presumably, though, the fourth in line, who didn't get called John,
yeah,
because brothers being what brothers are, decided to use that as some sort of leverage. Why wasn't I honoured with your name, Dad, as well?
And oddly, the family did, mainly for age reasons, but the brothers split down. You know, us three, me, Simon and Jonathan, were the kind of ones who went through the same school at the same time. The other two were always, because they were the juniors, basically, so they took all the blame for stuff we did.
I know what I wanted to ask you from last night onwards. Have you done Ancestry.co.uk with your family yet?
I haven't done it with Ancestry, but I did it with when I was working at a different radio station.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, they looked at the kind of Berkshire connections. But the problem we've got is, and Jonathan was asked to go on that, who do you think you are? A question I put to him regularly. Who do you think you are, Jonathan? But, oh, the old jokes work him in. But it's difficult because my nan, my dad's mum, never knew my father's father. My dad was illegitimate, and she said once, I think his name was John Ross, and I think he was Scottish. Yeah. But it was the Second World War, you know, things happened. So he was illegitimate. So when they did the research, it was only ever going to be my mum's side of the family, which made it a little bit difficult for them.
Right. But did you manage to get some pictures of some of your ancestors going way back you can often see slight traces of yourself or your brother or your
mum? I was lucky enough to know because my mum was so young when she had me and my nan was very young when she had my mum. I knew my great-grandma for about 10 years, wonderful woman. And she had photographs, almost daguerreotypes, types, of her great-grandmother.
No,
but it was remarkable because they're holding a baby who was the spit of my sister when she was younger and my youngest daughter. Yeah. And coincidentally, my dad's mum was born on April the 26th, my sister was born on April the 26th, and my youngest daughter was born on the same day, which is why we've given her the name Betty. I mean, Jonathan's got a daughter, Betty, named after mine then as well. Mm. And in the same family, three birthdays on the same day.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's just number coincidence, I suppose.
And it's very tantalising, isn't it, though, seeing those old, as you said, almost daguerreotype photographs. But for future generations now, and for the rest of time, people in 100 years' time, say, for example, when, you know, we're all dead and gone, they're going to be able to spool back through the internet and find out so much of what you looked like and what you sounded like and therefore get such a fantastic impression of who their great-great-great-great-granddad was compared to what we're stuck
That's
with.
Very
we've
true.
Run out of time.
Oh, okay.
I think we ought to, you know, let's get you in about an hour earlier next tomorrow night, shall we? Paul Ross, stand by for him. Enjoyed ourselves. Sam, Hayley and myself talk to you tomorrow night at the usual time.